This is HPR episode 1676, entitled HPR Community News for December 2014, and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 201 minutes long. The summary is HPR Community News for December 2014, and part 3 of the New Year Show 18-2000.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Moved and seconded.
It is now the HPR New Year Show, part 3. This is the HPR Community News. It is now 1800 UTC, and we have just welcomed in the time zones of Bangladesh, Russia, and 4 more. Happy New Year, everybody. The Community News, if you don't know already, is a show that we put on once a month to give you the ins and outs of what's been going on in the HPR Community News, in the HPR community. And if you've been listening to this, you probably have a better handle on what's going on than most. I'll paste the link to the show notes in so you can all follow along.
Yeah, can you paste an Omcast Planet or PM it to me, Ken Fallon, because I'm on my phone right now.
It's on Oddcast Planet, and if you go to the HPR site, it's episode 1676. Okay, folks. So the whole point of Community News, as I said, is to just give a bit of a rundown of what's been happening in the HPR community. And we usually start this with welcoming new hosts. This month's hosts are Rill and Michael, whose second name I will not be pronouncing, for those of you who thought I'm going to get a cheap laugh at me butchering it. So it started off with the HPR Community News for November 2014. And the following day we had Geek Speak, which was showcasting the Central Coast Public Broadcast Radio Show Splash Podcast, Geek Speak. I think this is one of yours,
Indeed it was. And the reason so old that I explained in my preamble in the show notes, when they started out, they weren't giving any thought to Creative Commons. And they always, I guess since they're a radio station, they can get away with it. They played, a part of Devo's Through Being Cool as their start music. And then, a couple of years ago, maybe more, they started to get thought towards going Creative Commons, and so they submitted for unique Creative Commons submissions. So occasionally they would play that instead, but I listened to the first part and the end part of months of I had to go clear all the way back to June of last year before I found one that didn't have Devo either at the start or the end. Now they did correspond with me, and I guess at least we've had the effect of that, making them realize that they got Devo all the time, even though they want to be Creative Commons. And so they said, well, we're not going to do Devo at the beginning anymore. So I guess we could say we've had a positive effect on that show. That was one of the first podcasts I started listening to, and it's great for just general technology news. And they're not a Linux podcast, but they are certainly Linux aware.
No, it was a great addition. It's nice to get these little shows, and there you're doing, I think, a boilerplate template of what you should do for syndication of shows, as we don't syndicate shows on HBR. There is a site called Hacker Media, which is a sister BINRA project, I think. And their shows can be syndicated. But this is a perfect example of, you know, taking a good show that you like, wrapping it up in a, here's why I like it, here's a sample episode, and off with you. Brilliant. And good show notes as well.
Thank you.
I think you're beginning to understand how paranoid I am about show notes.
Well, it always seems to be mine that caused you a problem.
No. It's lack of show notes folks, I've been freaking everybody out about whether we're going to have people to do the show notes or not for this episode. And the Etherpad thing is brilliant, actually. I really, really love that. It's a collaboration tool. It makes it really easy just to be able to copy and paste out the links in there. So thanks to Dave, though, he's already done the show notes for this section of the show, so we can just refer Etherpad to those. Anyway,
Hello there. It's Dave here. Just to say I'm here.
You say his name three times and he appears. I'm not saying. It's all the evidence I need. Stone him. How are you keeping, Dave?
I'm good, thank you. Happy New Year, everybody.
Yes. We had on 1653, and that was the third. Ahuka's was Ritual's interview, or at the, I think it was a talk at the Ohio Linux Fest, and about hardware needing to be open as well. I really liked this this interview. Or this talk, actually. And again, another good example of taking an episode or a Creative Commons event and wrapping it up and putting it on here as a sample.
And it is still permissible. I mean, I'm not saying we should do it when we've got plenty of shows in the queue, and I'm not sure how to define what's plenty, but it is still permissible to grab a talk off, say, archive.org and wrap it up and put it on as a show, isn't it?
Well, anything's permissible, but you kind of want to make it into a show yourself. If it's something that you found in archive.org that is interesting and cool and would be of interest to hackers, then absolutely do that. But if we're just day after day after day going out to archive.org and putting stuff on HPR just to keep HPR going on the back of somebody else's project, then I don't see a lot of point. You know, set up an RSS feed and feed it into Hacker Media and let everybody just get it from an aggregator. Then we become a planet, you know, and we're not creating new content. The whole point of this is to create new content.
And I do want to congratulate the HPR community, or commend them for stepping up. It's probably a good thing my computer was dead for 2 or 3 days. Because of fan problem, because I was gonna dump like three more in a row in there. So good on you, Hacker Public Radio community.
I second that completely. I had a few ready myself to rock, but I've already had this heart attack moment several times, and every single time the community does step up. Usually, you know who you are, who step up. Actually, it's very easy to find out who you are. It's basically the people who contributed this month. So. Yeah, well done. Those people earn a very special place in your heart. Wouldn't you agree, 50? Anyway, the following day we had 1654, which was using ASN numbers to uniquely identify each network on the internet. I don't know if anyone found this interesting, but I have been struggling with this problem for a long time, and this was a pretty elegant solution.
Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed it. Did you ever get the show notes attached to it? When I looked, I didn't think. Okay. Sorry to put you on the spot. That's one of those I'd either have to listen to it again and take notes, or hope I could find the resource somewhere. But yeah, that's I found that fascinating, not only that you could do it, but you'd actually come up with a real world use for it.
Yeah, I do have the show notes ready, but with this month being kind of busy on the HBR front, we'll be getting not only the community news but the other stuff that I've been doing. I haven't had a chance to cross post it and put it in here, but that those show notes will be coming. And after me giving you all the stick about not having show notes, then we go to my episode and it doesn't have any show notes. Okay, I'm going to put myself in the corner after the show. But it is you before I had that script, you want to see what an ugly hacks I had trying to get this thing achieved. And now it's just a simple bash case statement. It really, sometimes you have those little moments where your life suddenly is a lot has been made a lot better through the use of computers. I think Nightwise often talks about that, getting computer technology working for you, and that was a case where it worked for me. Okay, moving on. 1655, LibreOffice Calc, creating pivot tables. Does anyone ever use pivot tables?
Well, I might be able to now.
I will tell you a story because nobody else is talking, and hey, why not? There was a time when I was working for a company, and we were trying to convert people to using a standardized desktop, which was Microsoft Office at the time. And the amount of friction that we got from people, you would not believe it. I know in this world where people think Microsoft ruled the world, that was not the case. We had to give training courses after training courses to get people off Lotus 1-2-3 or other spreadsheet packages. And I remember there was one diehard accountant person who would not move over, and we had her in the training course, and she simply would not get on board with the program. And then I showed her pivot tables, and that was it. From that moment on, she switched, and the whole accounting team came over, and life was a lot more bearable after that. They are very powerful. If you happen to use them, download this episode.
Oh, and I want to interject from HashHogCast Planet. Kay Wisher just posted that he got email back from John Newsteader, and now we have 40 connections. So.
Yippity-doo! Can somebody who's on this please paste in the names at the very bottom of the episodes, put in a thank you page and add these people to it. K5 Tux as well, and Kevin yourself as well, please. So that we can have a list of people to thank at the end. Yeah. And Jonathan Culp from anhonesthost.com as well. Or somebody remind me to do that after the show. Then we had my audio player collection, which is from Dave Morris, who has far too many audible players. And this is part one. If was this part one, or was this the full total of your audio players, Dave?
No, this was it. This was it. I'm not doing any more. I've already driven everybody mad with this list. It just goes to show what happens when you retire and you haven't got enough to do.
Dave, you will always have enough to do. Just pick up the email and send me an email, and I will make sure you're busy for the rest of your natural.
Oh dear, what have I said?
No, brilliant. It was also nice because I had quite a lot of those myself, and it prompted me to dig out my first MP3 player, which I'm holding here, and it was an MP3 player because that's all it played. And for some reason, the back came off, and I was keeping the battery in with sellotape, and now the whole thing is like gunked up. The sellotape has come off, and all sorts of sand has stuck to it. So yeah, I might do an episode on that sometime. But good show, Dave. Good ideas. If
Thank
other
you.
people have other kit that they like to tell us about, that is something excellent and awesome that they should do. Your first computer, your first device that you carried around that you really fell in love with. The following day, we had John Culp from Louisiana, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? I seem to associate him with that. Anyway, Hacking Gutenberg eBooks. I love this show. I love this show because it's got technology that's outside of copyright, and he's going in there and doing exactly that. There's one thing that's annoying him, And he's going in and he's fixing it, and you can do that because you've got access to the books. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant.
Well, this is a whole example of using open software to scratch your own itch, because I mean, you know, I wouldn't spend that much time on formatting a book, but I'm so glad that he can do it.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, 50, you've had that thing where it's just annoying you. It's, every time you look at it, it's annoying. Maybe it's just me. Yeah, it possibly is just me, but it's really, really cool to be able to go in and make that change. And the like, going back to the script that I have, every time I used to run it, I knew it was a kludge. Even though it worked, I still knew it was a kludge. Now I run it, and it has exactly the same outcome, but it feels nice and comfy. I don't know. It's a small thing.
No, that's why we're hackers. We'll spend 3 hours on tweaking something that has absolutely nothing to do with our productivity, and we could just as easily ignore.
Absolutely, yeah. It's that XKCD comic. So I'll try and remind myself to put a link to that one in the show notes. The following day, we had Cool Stuff Part 2. C-Prompt talks about more cool stuff that he discovered, one of which was the Today I Found Out podcast. Did anyone start listening to that, Dave? I can't believe that wasn't in your list.
No, sorry.
And we had Davin was the host of that podcast and website, came onto the comments and said thanks for mentioning the show, which is kind of cool. And command line tips, control left, right, that was also very excellent. And XD tool, which was something I didn't know about in XFCE. Very nice. The only thing, again, I would say is, why not split it up into 3 episodes? But that's just me.
No, I really enjoyed that one as well.
The following day, we had John Archer with Core Nominal, who is rapidly putting all of us who do interviews to shame with the professionalism that he has at the putting in editing at the beginning and then the beeps and the interview and the beep outs. So very, very good show with John Archer. I understand as well that they're going to start a new podcast. Was he involved in the Linux podcast? Or did I get that wrong?
Well, it's been a while since I listened to an episode, but yeah, I think there was something about that in there.
I think they pulled circle one of our sister podcasts, at least definitely in our HBR family. They are stopping with the Full Circle podcast and they're starting a podcast called the Linux Podcast. And I believe they're having somebody from the UK Fedora team. I think it could be John, but we'll see. But it was a nice interview. It's nice to be getting some more of these odd camp interviews as well.
Yeah, thanks.
Am I audible?
Yes, you're audible.
Fabulous.
Audible.com.
I hate you.
And you get to keep the book after you hate me. Anyway, the following day, which was the 12th of the 12th, which was my birthday, trying out Slackware, HBR 1660. Slackware newbie, Benny, is talking to a long-time Slackware user, McNallu. And this was a nice sort of chatty episode and basically all about Slackware. So, Opans, whose first distro was Slackware in the day? Gosh, that's a lot of hands. Well done.
Yeah, I haven't been playing with Linux long enough for me to come in when it was the only distribution.
It was my first one on the same machine that we were testing out Windows 95, believe it or not. We also were trying out Slackware in Mark. So, there you go. And the reason was because they both had a DVD.
Not to start another debate, but, you know, I just don't understand the dichotomy really with Slackware, because you can install it, have it not install those parts of the kernel that for hardware that you don't have. So you can make it very slim on memory, but you know, as a default, you install every single package that you could ever possibly install at the beginning, so you have the huge hard drive footprint.
Yeah, but you didn't have to. You could. That's why the AZ packages. You could load CD or the floppy disk B or the floppy disk D. So you have them split up that way. It was kind of cool, efficient that way as well. And of course, back in the day, I don't think you had the Linux modules. Everything had to be compiled in. The whole module system wasn't there at the time.
Hey, 5150, what kind of FUD are you spreading? When you do a Slackware install, you can choose individual packages from the different sections. You don't have to install everything.
Wow, you were loud.
And you're Zelda.
And you're Zelda.
Well, Dan, I understand that, but a lot of what they were talking about, plus their theory is, since it's not a problem that it's more difficult to install packages on Slackware because you're installing every package that you could ever need during the installation process, so you never have to go back and compile and install software.
I think that was more to do with the dependencies, though. I've heard Cloud2 on about that you install a lot of the dependencies, so anything that would be on those disks, you just install it and you don't need the dependencies because they're already there.
Oh, I see. So what they're talking about is installing just about all the possible libraries, but not actual applications.
I believe so, but Slackware gave me a lot of gray hair, it has to be said.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
See what you can pick up, folks, if you listen to enough podcasts. Anyway, Cornomo, again, 1661, on-camp interview with Paul Thompson. This I loved. The Code Club volunteers. This is following on from my interview last month with, or is it this month actually? Yeah. Anyway, getting more kids involved is the way to solve a lot of these profile issues with members of the community. And this is a brilliant way to do it. Getting them, going out volunteering, going in supporting teachers, and giving a class. One day a week to your local school. That's genius. That's what that is. And the following day we had Linux Logcast episode 0001, outtakes, pre-show and after-show banter, and with Kevin Wishers. I like this. I like the Linux Logcast shows for a start because they're quite interesting. But this was a cool pre and post show chat. But again, if you're into this sort of 26-hour show, then why wouldn't you be into another outtake show?
And there is another one that we're gonna get to. Yeah, there's some of the things that were in that first show that if I'd known it was gonna be used, I might have used a slightly different phrasing, but that's okay. I can't imagine anybody's ever gonna listen to it that would get me into trouble, but I'm going to take, since I'm, feel free to have at me, since I'm the only member of Linux Slugcast, everybody's a member of Linux Slugcast because everybody is welcome to come, but the only regular member here in the room, so, feel free to take shots at me on those podcasts, but I remember watching IRC when that came out, and I wasn't sure what was going on, and I think it applies more to my shows last month, but somebody was saying, well, we got to do this every time HPR gets low on shows, is just load up 5150 on beer and let them sit there and talk.
Yeah, but yes, I actually am completely in agreement with that, especially when you do the beer reviews at 50. So you keep doing that, my friend. The following day, I don't know if it was the following day, but the next in sequence is HBR 1663, which was an interview with Greg Greenlee, founder of Blackson Technology. And as I said in the show, basically it was a bit of a stomp about OGCamp, and did it basically reflect society? And the answer, of course, is no. Whether it reflected the state of the technology world, the answer is probably yes. more so than most, I would say. But it just does highlight that we have a bug here. We have a bug here in relation to the type of hackers that we're getting in. That's not to say we're excluding these hackers at all. We need to grow the community because there are hackers out there everywhere. It's just they probably don't know they're hackers yet. So we need to grab them and pull them in, not because they're black, not because they're white, not because they're, I don't know, Asian, not because whatever, because they're hackers. So, yeah, that's, and I would like, I've sent out a few more feelers to other people to see if they would like to come on and just discuss this topic. I don't want it to be we're talking to this person, minority group, because there happen to be a minority group. But I do want to make sure that we are pulling people in and that we're making everybody feel as welcome as possible and we're getting as many hackers as possible in the world.
Well, just microcosm of that, it was questioned in the mailing list whether we should, you know, be saying, well, make ethnic distinctions, but, you know, clearly with lack of participation by everyone except, white European descent males, is actually worse in the free software area than it is in technology in general. So clearly, I think somebody making an effort, especially if we could go, if it would be possible to go in places and teach people the young age to come over to technology, the culture tends to exclude from technology because clearly the culture does.
I don't think that the culture excludes necessarily. I think it's more the fact that there's not as many antisocial minority people.
That's another kind of worms, I'm afraid. But I think to answer the thing on the mailing list is, it's a valid point. Why are we segregating off blacks in technology and why are they doing their own thing? Yet at the same time, if you think of it from the point of view of, the Ubuntu UK podcasts are doing that. They're having a show just about Ubuntu. So, it's just another way. We're the same community. They're just supporting their community in the same way that the Ubuntu community is supporting Ubuntu users. It's just a different way of looking at the fish. And I was really glad to hear from Greg that he does consider himself part of the general community. In fact, his reason for doing it, his reason for getting involved was his participation at the Ohio Linux Fest, which again is a great legacy for the Ohio Linux Fest. So regardless, it's something that we need to keep an eye on, and I think we need to move on to the next show, if that's okay with everyone. And that was 1664, Life and Times of a Geek, Part 1. Dave, you are prompting me to, there are so many shows I want you to do as a result of this one. For a start, how to use the slide rule. Yes, you definitely need to do that.
Yes, I've agreed that I'll have a go, though. As I said in the comments, my old mathematics teacher would probably have a fit if he heard me trying to explain this, because I was not a good student in those days. But I'll have a shot.
Correct me if I'm wrong, we always had to use log tables, but if you had a slide rule, you could work it out.
Yeah, it's a logarithmic scale. You just align numbers according to, you put if you're multiplying two numbers, you put one on the bottom and the other one above it. And because they're logarithmic scales, you can read off the answer on the slide rule. I can't really do it because I've forgotten and I haven't got one in front of me.
Tell you what you need to do, right? Is I remember on Deal Extreme or somewhere like that, one of the Chinese deal or cheap websites, they had slide rules that you could buy for real cheap, but they take about a month or two to get there. So if we can find out one of those, put it in the mailing list, then everybody can order them. And then once everybody's got their slide rules, you can do the show. How about that?
Yes, yes, right, everybody. Let's multiply 3 by 3. And this is how. Yes, I can see it now.
I would personally love that as well. Yeah.
There are some good resources out on the web. I did notice that. So I'll probably be pointing at those once I get around to doing the show. But yeah, it's cool. It's cool stuff.
But even aside from that, you did prompt me to reconsider looking at how I got into Linux as well, how I got into tech once. Yeah, love these shows. Keep them coming, folks. Keep them coming.
Well, I always love these origin shows, and especially somebody who's an original geek like Dave.
Oh, they don't come much older than me.
Yeah, but it's you put the origin shows like that 150. You put your finger on it, like everybody in all of the shows that's been done, every single person has had a different story, and it's just amazingly interesting.
This was the reason that I did this, because I don't think I would have wanted to do this if I hadn't heard other people doing what I found to be fascinating shows about their origins. So thanks to everybody else for prompting me to do it, really.
Yeah, I think I'll rename this series Origin episode. I need to remember to come back and do that once I listen to the show.
And I figured it must exist. Dave doesn't have any excuse for not doing the show right away, because I just posted an Allcast Planet a slide rule simulator page.
Well, cool.
Oh no, there's no way out,
folks. You won't hear this because of the truncated silence. But for the next 10 minutes, it's been silent.
Can I sit in the back of this classroom with the other cool kids?
You. Someday you'll be stranded on a desert island, needing to know the exact angle for takeoff, right? And you'll be going, why didn't I pay attention with my slide rule?
I don't think that's ever going to happen, because I don't really leave my house, so...
Global warming, your house becomes an island.
You'd never see it coming.
Time.
Anyways, working with pivot tables, I can't basically say any more about that than I already have said. Pivot tables are cool. If you are not using them, you should. And don't forget that there are examples in the show notes and detailed links and summaries in all the Hooker shows. So very, very good. Keep up the good work. Bare Metal Programming from the Raspberry Pi Part 3. Whew. No fluff episode here, I'll tell you. Nothing this... Oh, you know the intro and outro thing where we go the episodes for text-to-speech that I think all our visually impaired listeners hate? I love it, because if I was listening to this, if I was on the train in the morning and listening to this, I would have a brain seizure. This show had to be listened at the particular correct time that your brain is capable of taking it in.
Oh, yeah.
By the way... I love these shows, don't get me wrong.
Oh yeah, I gotta hand it to Gabriel Evenfire. I mean, it wouldn't occur to me. Let's get a Raspberry Pi in it as a learning experiment. Let's start and build our own operating system for it.
It's just amazing the level this guy is operating on. It's just, yeah, I'm shocked. I'm shocked by, you know, the quality of stuff everybody on this network brings, and I'm embarrassed by times of what I put up. Look at me, I've written a bash script. Yeah, and here's Gabriel writing ARM code and transporting libraries over. That's amazing. Awesome, awesome, awesome stuff, folks. And the following day, first time host Rill, how to start your own blog. And we've had this up on the requested topics, and I think the approach here was, you know, why you would start your own blog. And I really had to chuckle, because on my own blog, it's I have for the SEO people, that my blog target audience is so that I won't forget stuff. So my target audience is already met 100% when I read it myself. So, but it was a very nice philosophical look at why you might want to start a blog. So a good read. Plateau made a welcome return with talks about the Nix installer packaging applications for GNU Linux and the BSDs. To be honest, I didn't even know this was possible, and I need to put this into the packaging series that he has done. He's done some in the past on RPMs and Debs and that sort of thing. This is excellent.
Oh yeah, I can't imagine this. And hats off to the coders who built this system. A distro agnostic packaging system, and especially when it knows what it knows what distro it's going on, and puts stuff in the appropriate folders and solves dependencies and etc. I mean, just hats off to this. And you know, it seems like, well, why would we need to mess with any other package manager?
Well, I think it was more supporting the package manager as just a way of distributing it. But what I really liked about this was that it could integrate with the existing package manager, so that when you did a yum erase or a aptitude remove or whatever, that it would know that those files are there and you could remove it that way, which is a stroke of genius, you know.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that. That is the best part of it.
Brilliant. And you know, I suppose as Plateau says, he was doing a hack by running his own scripts and, you know, doing a sort of bootstrap. But hey, you know, you could send down a simple app like that and then have it pull stuff from your own website or whatever. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I liked it. Monsieur New Wybill, New Retro Computing, and another person who's operating, I must say, at a higher level than myself, although I would like him to do some more introduction to electronics thingies. This is a very, very interesting topic. It's a little basic computer. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's another one of those things that never would occur to me to do. I mean, it sounds fascinating, but I'd want to get a really working computer out of it. I mean, maybe if you could do a retro Apple II or something like that. But yeah, hats off. It would. This is just something that I can't imagine doing myself. But I'm glad Bill is here to tell us about it.
I mean, some of my first computers were basic computers and just dropped you to a prompt like that, and then. Okay, what next? 10, print hello, go to 10. Yep, pretty cool. Anyways, the following day, AHUKA, Privacy and Security, Digital Signatures and Certificates, how Canonical got all its money. Good, he is laying the foundation for a very, very good security and privacy series. So much so that the security community are now beginning to refer to HBR as a location for getting security podcasts. So well done, AHUKA.
Yeah, I hadn't realized that. That's great. And I so much enjoy this series as well.
Yeah, I follow the, I get notified of the Twitter feeds. If you follow at HBR, we've been, in the last week or so, we've been getting things about security podcasts that you should listen to HBR for. Socials, which is very, very good. Linux Lugcast episode 2 outtakes. I think we've already discussed this one. That's okay.
Yeah, I think we talk about that as a whole, no problem. Jump to the next one.
Roger. And then we had Steve with Systemd for Learner Drivers, how to drive Systemd without crashing the vehicle through arguing with your passengers. My main argument against Systemd was exactly this, that there wasn't, and again with Pulse Audio, I think a lot of the confusion comes from the fact that people don't know what's going on and they feel there's no documentation there, or they don't know how to get to the documentation, and it's all very well to say there's a man page. But this, I think, has done more for my understanding of Systemd than anything else. Now I'm looking at some of the tools that he's mentioned. I go, oh, that's a lot better than what we had before. Oh, this is a lot better than what we had before. And then you go, oh, the whole approach now after doing this seems very much like what Sun Solaris have done with their work, or IBM or AIX. And you think, okay, well, this is System D might be trying to make Linux a little bit more professional, perhaps. So,
but well, I think go ahead, Ken.
No, I was finished. I was just telling you to go ahead.
Okay. I don't know. I think a lot of the init versus systemd debate is just because, you know, for people who are already init hackers and know what to how to get down in that system and do something with it, it's just, oh, we got to learn all this all over again, I think, is a lot of the resistance. And then probably your average Linux user who doesn't get that deep into their system, it's probably transparent to them.
Yeah, but a lot of sysadmins who work on various different Unix systems would know that on other platforms this exists, you know, and it's not random from one distribution to the other to the whatever. I'm not arguing for it or against it. Yeah, don't get me wrong here, and I would prefer it if in a way, you know, you're going away from the BSDs not using this, but in another way, you're harmonizing the Linux distributions, so all Linux distributions are now operating like this. Because before you had Debian doing it one way, Fedora doing it another way, you know, and yeah, now if everybody uses systemd, well, systemd is the way Linux does it.
But it still feels like systemd is fragmented.
That says maybe, but at least here, my point here with this episode was, okay, now somebody has explained what's going on, and then we can make an informed argument as to whether it, you know, it makes sense or not. So cascading thing seems a bit overdone to me, but this is a good kickoff point. You know what I mean? Talking about the episode, not the system D now per se.
Yeah, it was a great episode. I really enjoyed it.
And I think he did manage to avoid, you know, okay, here's systemd, whatever you say about it, this is how it works. I'm not saying it one way or the other. So, yeah, brilliant. Loved it. Something else that is normally available on Linux is the ZFS file system. And this was also from first-time hook Michael Kuransky. Nope, not pronouncing that right. Anyone want to have a go?
I would say Sierinski.
I would be more than happy to accept that.
Can I put my two penneth in? I have two Polish guys living next door, and I took this name across to them and said, how would you say that? And they said, it's Cherazinski.
Dave,
so there you go.
Above and beyond.
Well, I just saw them in the driveway and said...
This is so typical of you, Dave. I do a script, and you come along and replace my 20 lines with a one-liner in Perl. Thank you very much. Slap me in the face again, why don't you?
Just because I have Polish neighbours, you know, it's nothing to do with me.
No, brilliant. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Anyway, great episode, and also refers to another good episode by JWP. And that was it for the month as far as episodes go. All in all, 15, not bad considering we were starving for shows at the beginning of the month, eh?
Yeah, I was sweating bullets a little bit too.
I bet you are. That has been my life for the last God knows how many years, 4 years now.
It's been 4 years?
Well, HPR has been going for 7 years, so yeah. I've been posting them for about 4 years, I think.
Holy crap. Congrats there, Ken.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, Dave, do the comments. Earn your living. And there better be a good humorous story with every single one of these, yeah?
What? No, Ken, I'll defer to you. You're better at this than I am.
Let me see. Have start a blog. Which way do we start?
Well, we normally start from the bottom, I think, don't we? Because it's the way we've ordered this, we agreed on doing it this way, but I always find it a little bit puzzling, to be honest with you. It's ordered this way because that's the order that you'll see the comments in the if you follow the P link in from the homepage.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I don't know what to do.
Start do you like tilts and start in the middle?
Yeah, okay. We had Mans Munson asking about TiddlyWiki, if and this is on to John Culp's adopting and renovating a textbook. I don't know why, what the point of TiddlyWiki would be, except textbooks. As I'm searching for TiddlyWiki here, makes it great. It's a versatile note-taking application you can download for free. Is this a is this an advertisement? Did you let some spam in, Mons? Are you spamming us?
I couldn't make. I let this one through, so it's my fault. But I couldn't make up my mind. It looked like a genuine comment, but.
No, no. I've heard of TiddlyWiki. I think Dave Yates used to use it in the day. So we had a Bare Metal Programming Part 2. We had even more comments, of course, from Mike Ray saying brilliant, a brilliant episode. And, oh no, sorry, it was Alison. It would be great basis for a hackfest, and I couldn't agree more, yes. A comment on one of your episodes, 5150, by Gigasphere, basically saying that community is made of people. And that, yeah, it's a great episode, good to listen to, and makes you remember that it's the people that makes the difference.
Well, thank you for those kind words, Gigaspirit. See, I'm only seeing part of these. My comment on the on what you link you gave me just ends in great episode.
Yeah, you need to click on the link, or you need to click on the P in Hacker Public Radio. And then you will see that. So, for example, there's also a comment on the Unison syncing utility by Bort. Hi, 5150. Thanks for the podcast on Unison. One thing I would like to add is that both backends need to be the exact same version. When I tried getting it working between two Ubuntu machines with different versions, it wouldn't talk to each other. So it took it ages to figure out what was wrong. Also, when we were talking about this last month, I think I was saying I was having trouble with it in work, and then I realized that there are different versions of Unison that you can install, and it's only in later versions that has this sync bug. So if you go back and install a previous version of 1.something or 2.something, definitely not the 2.4 version, it doesn't have this Unicode panic issue that I'm seeing. So it's a case of Linux Luddites deciding we like the old stuff better, I guess.
Okay, great. It was a bolt. Thanks for that, because that was more detail or more research than I went into. And sounds like, unfortunately, you came up on some of that stuff by accident. But good on you for coming up with a solution and posting same.
Yep, and there was a lot of comments on your bash parameter manipulation, David. Starting with our comment by, let me see, we went down as far as John Cope, I think it started. This month it started by John Cope, yes, whole new category of cool bash tricks. I think John had a few bash scripts himself, if I recall.
Oh, John's no slouch when it comes to Bash, so it's very kind of him to make complimentary comments. He's a pretty cool guy himself.
And they had there was a comment by Music Piece talking about Magnitunes as well. You replied to that. Can you just give us the summary?
Yeah. He was saying thanks for the show, and also thanks for the pointer to Magnitude, which he apparently hadn't come across, which is surprising. But Magnitude is not free, but but it's an excellent source of music, and it's run by John Buckman, who does an amazing job. And really, he's one of these people who he's running a label, a music label here, but he's paying great attention to the artists, which is pretty unusual for music labels, in my understanding. So he's a person to be admired, I believe.
Yeah, I think I remember hearing an interview with him on the Linux and Tech Show, but it's a long time ago now, so it might be time for somebody to give him a call and see what they're doing and how they're getting on. They do promote Creative Commons works, though, unless they change that. Yeah,
I think you so. Have to yes, pay
for them, but they do. It is Creative Commons works.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah.
Sorry, the next one, Raspberry Pi accessibility. And this was Mike Ray, who, just to recall, he fixed a bug on the with Pi Speak Up. And we had a comment by Gigasphere saying, thanks, Mike. Great episode. Great to help. Great to hear these types of episodes. And he had this issue with eSpeak, and he completely agrees with the accessibility
terminals. Hey everybody, it's Claudio Miranda. How are you?
Hi Claudio.
Oh, how are you doing? Doing okay. Trying to figure out how to mumble. I should have talked to 5150 first.
we're in the middle of
community news. We should be wrapping up in a minute.
And you're on.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting a lot of
your
noise. If anything, I guess I'll try and call in a little bit later.
Just give us 10 minutes. I think the next time zone. Speaking of time zones, did we miss one?
I think we've got 3 minutes to the next one.
Whoa.
Oh god, my ears.
Yeah, okay. That's I think that summarizes that. Okay, comments on the HBR community news of last month. The reason all these comments seem so new to me is because somebody has taken over my job of approving the comments, Mr. Morris, and now I'm reading them.
Ah. Are you trying to help there, Ken?
You don't know what's worse this month? 51 snoring or Ken Fallon singing, thank you very much, Mr. Mike Ray.
Well, it wasn't just my snoring. In fact, it was mainly Tankinator snoring because he was keeping me awake.
That pushed the boundaries that episode, I really do have to say.
I mean, all the crashing and thrashing that you hear in there, that's me awake rolling over from side to side trying to go back to sleep.
Yeah, and Dave, there was also a comment in there. Dave, you kindly put in the Indiegogo projects deleting digital divide one computer at a time. Is that over? Yeah, I think it's over.
I think it is, actually, yeah.
And then we had a lot of comments also by Mike Reyes on my audio player collection by Dave Morris, Mike Ray, who thoughtfully had the Dave Morris National Audio Player Museum, and commenting about getting an Ericsson can might actually work. P commented that you never tried the iRiver Clix 2. Why, Dave? Yep. Why?
It's only so many hours in the day. It's actually quite hard to get hold of them now. I've been hunting eBay for them. They don't seem to be about. Maybe they're not very popular. Maybe they're not. Then people don't like them as much as P does. Anyway, I shall try. If I find one, I'll let you know.
Okay, and you replied to both of them as well. So, and P then replied to you. Basically goes into both of you go into a discussion about that. If you want to read more, they're in the comments, available as an RSS feed.
Ken, as an aside, would it be? Yep. I don't know if it be. Would it be possible to email the host? Automate emailing the host when one of their shows has been commented on. Obviously, had a couple on there of comments that I didn't personally get back to, just because I'm not in the habit of going back and looking for comments where I probably should be.
It is something we could consider.
Something we've spoken about before, isn't it, Ken? At least I have. Yeah. I was going to say I use an RSS reader. Since I still use RSS because I'm old and creaky, then I find that I see all the alerts to new podcasts in an RSS reader quite successfully. But that's just me.
Yeah, some people might like the RSS, and because then if we start emailing everybody every time a comment comes on, we'd have to get opt in whether they want to do that or not. So I don't know. What do you think? Can we put that on to the it's a mailing list discussion? I think 50. It's a good point. Technically, I think we can do it. Yeah, because we're doing emails now for the show uploads, which we'll get to in a minute. So I think we could do it technically. I'd like to hear back from people. I'm reluctant though to have to go around and put another tick box in for people. Do you want notifications when comments come in?
We'll kick that one over to the newsletter.
Okay, so we had some other comments, cool stuff part two, about cprompt. And Davin says, we already said he put in a link to his todayifoundout.com, which I need to add to my reader, and we need to send that out as well.
You need to tell about the new year there, Ken.
Okay, and no, you can do that.
Oh no, I don't have the thing in front of me.
Okay, so then who else can I get to do this?
Welcome to much of Russia. Okay, 1900. I'm sorry. Greetings to Pakistan and Tashkent, Islamabad, Lahore, and Karachi.
And we missed India, Sri Lanka, New Delhi, Mumbai, Kolkata, and Bangalore at the half hour. So happy New Year to you as well.
We're sorry we missed so many of you.
And we missed Nepal, Kathmandu, Briknatar, and please put me down this misery. I apologize.
You know, in light of or in lieu of having a New Year's whistle to blow every time, since Pegwall's here.
Well, what I do?
Well, you could get the didgeridoo and play it every time we celebrate a New Year.
I did have a text-to-speech thing announcing them, but then you were all talking over them in the background, so I stopped it. It was coming in on the HPR streaming bot. It was going announcing them at a particular time, so I just cancelled that.
You mean this year? I didn't realize.
Yeah, at the beginning, I put it in the IRC and in the chat, and he just kept talking over. I don't know. It sounds just like somebody's got text to speech on and mumble because it's the same voice. It's the speak voice. So you probably didn't notice it.
Okay, that's what I was hearing. Yeah. Well, if we could get the break at the exact right time, which I did several times this morning. Well, that's a great idea, so we don't miss it. But and I guess I was going to say if it wasn't coming over the mumble, then anybody recording on mumble wouldn't be able to get it. But
because it was coming in on the mumble, then everybody on mumble gets it, and because it goes out on the mumble bot, it's coming from the mumble bot, they also got it. So it's probably more pronounced for the people on the recordings than it was for you.
Did the text-to-speech pronounce things right, Ken?
Well, it pronounced them better than me. And my Bill left a comment, by the way, on Ogcamp interview with John Archer, and he just realized that he had met him in person at Ogcamp.
I saw that comment. I've met John as well, twice now.
Cool. There were comments to trying out Slackware, and Lumix. Enjoyed listening to minor corrections since 14.4. The ISO is a ISO hybrid that you can put straight onto a pen drive. Mike Gray giving in comments that it's not on the front of the pack with accessibility. So some work that could be done there. And Benny replied, giving some answers back there. If you want to read those in the show notes, you're more than welcome to do so. Then we had a few comments on the episode that I did with Greg Greenlee, basically referring to the links to the podcast at Merck. Dave, has he gotten back to you with the correct link?
Yes, I posted it as a comment there, Ken. It's in the second comment after this thing. It's a Spreaker. We use Spreaker for their podcast, so it's there. He said he was going to put it on the site when he had a moment.
Okay, yeah, cool. And then there was a lot of comments to your Life and Times of a Geek from F10E. Cool stuff. Nice start. Looking forward to more, as am I. Colin also replied, says it was a great episode, looking to the SlideRoute tutorial. And you, of course, replied back saying that you definitely will be doing a tutorial in the future.
No escape, eh?
No, none. Bare Metal Programming Part 3, just two more sets of comments. Mike Ray really liking the show, as he should. And then Gabriel replying back, giving some answers to the questions that he mentioned. And to Rill's episode and how to start a blog. Saying Davy Jordan likes Flap Press because it doesn't require a database like WordPress does. Never heard of that one. Davy, you should really do a episode on Flash Press. That would be interesting to hear. So that is pretty much it for the comments and for the rundown on the reviews. So all that's left for us to do is discuss what was going on the mailing list. And then the community news is pretty much over. So let me just dig that out. So Mike Ray has an alternative text-to-speech SVOC-Pico, which was available for Ubuntu. And I installed it there. Worked beautifully. Really liked the sound coming out of it. Haven't had a chance to implement that into the workflows yet because I've been a bit busy with the getting ready for this show and also finishing off the New Year's resolution for the which we'll talk about in a while. So if anybody knows how to get that installed onto Fedora really easy, that would be it'd be nice to have a how-to. Yes, I think somebody replied back saying that I can take the package apart and have a look, or you know. There's a package to build for Arch, but I'm lazy. I want more. And then, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, when you get that working, that project, put a link in the mailing list. I developed a small interest in text to speech, and you may or may not have heard earlier this morning. I was talking to Jonathan. Some, I think he agrees with me that the default voice in eSpeak, at least in eSpeak, is the easiest one to hear because he listens to it so many times advanced, and when he tries one of the more natural sounding ones, he has more. He says he can't understand them as well as the default voice. Okay, please continue.
But
Mike and Trenton, we did get around to talking about that this morning.
Okay, let's not redo that again. But yeah, Mike is kind of passionate about the Mike Ray is also blind, and he's passionate about using eSpeak as well because it's very fast. So, but there are other accessibility uses for text to speech engine, which is my use case, and that is where speed is not of the essence, but understanding is and nurturing, so the person listening doesn't go away crying. That is my goal with text to speech. So We shall meet somewhere in the middle, I hope. Then we had a call for emergency shows, and we were, put it down to the wire, basically. You know, I put it more prominent on the website, but I will said it before and I'll say it again. If we don't get shows, HPR as a project stops. Very, very simple. If you don't have shows, it stops. That is going to happen someday. You know, we've discussed it, and community news is probably a good time to discuss that. But we've already touched upon it a bit, I guess, 50, and, you know, we could rehash all episodes, but, you know, I want to go down... I want to go down like a flaming ship. If there's no episodes, then we just stop it, and then but everything's available in archive.org. It's not as if we've lost anything, but the only person who decides whether HPR continues as a project is people listening to it, and they do that by submitting shows. We've already had 260 shows this year, and just to give you an idea, Linux Outlaws, one of the most prolific podcasts, have been running for 7 years, and they have released 370 shows. We have released 260 this year, and so, you know, completely different ballpark. But just to give you an idea of the number of shows that we churn through here every week. And again, if you hear people, other podcasters, who've been discussing HPR as an alternative to, you know, as a Linux podcast, and especially when we've had the promo going out for this show, and we need to thank everybody who played that. And a lot of them say they don't listen to the show, and that's absolutely fine that they listen to one or two episodes there. This is actually, it's very few people who has, you know, you need to be a specifically dedicated podcast listener to be able to listen to every one of these shows coming out on this network. So that is, it's just the volume of stuff I want to say is overwhelming for a lot of people. But we do five shows a week, so therefore we need five shows a week coming in to meet them. And thanks to everybody who did contribute shows this month. That's all I'll say about that.
And this might be an interesting point to Mitch. I see you've scheduled for show 1700, which, counting the 300 episodes of Today with a Techie, will be the 2000th show for this podcast network. I don't know if we have any idea what we want to do or not, or if this is the time to discuss it, but I did want to throw out there, somebody don't look ahead at the calendar like I do, that's coming up.
Well, I do have a plan for that episode. So that episode I reserved for myself, because I'm one of the Today with a Techie hosts, so I have a plan for that episode. However, I've also reserved episode 2000 of HPR, which will be 300 episodes later, and I very soon will be reserving episode 2084 for those binary 48. That's the one you have to see. Just calculate that. Okay, so I do have a plan. I do have a plan. 50. I'll tell you if you really want to know, but I'd like to keep
it. No, I wasn't questioning or anything. I was just saying, hey, I saw that out there in the schedule, and I thought it was worth noting at this point that the show is reserved.
It is indeed. It is indeed. A lot of shows. Then we had, back to the mailing list, we had a reminder of the HPR Audio Boot Club 14, which is on tonight, which was the 9th. And the Boot Club. Do I say that funny? Book. The Boot Club. The next one is at 2015-01-12 at 7 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. And the audiobooks will be City of Masks by Mike Ravens Macmillan, available at audiobooks.com. Links in the show notes. The audio quality is not as bad as he remembers a few years ago. Okay, so it's a good audiobook. Don't be put off by the audio quality. And yes, I was complaining about people uploading shows with the old intro, and guess what? It was my fault. I had the wrong intro on the website. So apologies to everybody for me being a Nuna. So please, 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 if you notice stuff on the site that's wrong, please contact me or admin at hackerpublicradio.org or send me an email directly. I would appreciate it. Then we have a whole go of discussions about the New Year planning show. I don't know if we want to go into them, but basically I love Etherbad, and that's all we have to say about that. And unfortunately, our FOSDEM stand proposal was rejected, but I'm still going, and I'm bringing Dave.
Or vice versa, however you like to look at it.
I'm actually bringing my nephew. He's a 16-year-old gossip, and will be doing some videos or something with us. So he's quite excited to come as well. So
there very cool.
Yes, and I think recently the Netherlands rescinded their you can drink beer at 16 law, but I still think in Belgium you can drink beer at 16. So, although he's not into beer anyway, so there you go.
Likes the hard stuff, does he?
You have to be 21. No, you have to be 18 to drink the hard stuff. So,
Ken Fallon contributing to the delinquency of minors.
No, it's not. I just find it funny that you have this arbitrary date that you decide. Well, I think I've said it before, but I was talking to a friend of mine about why you can buy a gun in the States at 18, and you can only start drinking when you're 21. And he put me in my place very well by saying, Ken, you don't want those two things happening on the same day.
So I'm not sure what the lower age is. I bought a gun before. You can buy long guns just about any time. You can't buy a pistol till you're 21.
Well, fair enough. So you can do it on the same day. That's very very strange. Anyway, enough gun talk. If I once I saw Flying Rich, I thought, oh, okay, there's going to be gun talk on this show. So we will be enjoying that later. One comment about the moderators. We don't moderate here on Hack Puppet Radio. Then we have the outro team. HBR Community News, believe it or not, is now. Podcast promos at the end of HBR shows. So here's the deal. When we put together some promos ourselves for this New Year show, we sent them out to a lot of people, and a lot of people were very gracious to play the shows for the promos for us on their shows. And I think in return, it would be nice if we could, you know, play other people's promos at the end of our shows, at the very end of the outro, just slap on a promo there. And now we've got a workflow that allows us to do that. I think it's something we can do. So I don't think there's any objection to that from anybody, really.
Who do I send the promo to?
Admin@hackerpublicradio.org. And I was kind of thinking that we would just send a link, Rich, and I'll or send it, whatever, or tell me where you can get it, and I'll pull it down. I was thinking, it was actually because you were doing the promo, and you've been very good to HPR down through the years, that we definitely should be, you know, spreading the love, and especially if you're doing an episode, you know, promoting some other podcast, and you're putting it in the feed like you did, 50. It would be nice to have their promo at the end of that show, you know?
Yeah, I agree. If we get back to this complaint about, adding stuff and it's too long and all that, I guess we could remember other shows are only doing promos once every week or every 2 weeks. So we wouldn't necessarily, I think, have to feel obligated to being a promo each and every day. But, you know, like I said, I assume since you're suggesting it, it must be, you must have a way to completely automate it so it's no more work for you to do.
Absolutely. I would not be suggesting it otherwise. I'm actually thinking about the mechanism, because sometimes we might want to promote a particular show more heavily. You know, if an event was coming up, you might want to say, you know, and you know, that for any shows being posted between in the month of January you want to put on, that this event that's starting in February is coming on, if you get my drift. And the only comment I think about that was, you know, by Mike Ray, I think if people don't like it, they can just delete the shows at the end. The only thing would be it makes the shows that little bit longer. Okay, so people, it's open for discussion. So tell us what you think, and we will see from there. Okay, the other thing that has been occupying an awful lot of my time this month has been the New Year's resolution I made here on HPR last year, and that was that we would be able to upload shows via the website, and that is now possible. You can now upload a show directly from the website. So we don't know if anybody's seen that or tried that.
I haven't looked at the contribute page in a while. Has it been edited then?
Yeah, I've done an awful lot of tidying up of all the pages. There's I did stuff on the about page, for instance, where I now have you know, a little bit of our history, what differentiates us, you know, some things of interest to hackers. You can download and listen to the show, showing you how to do that. One thing I want to put in there as well is floating the idea of an additional RSS feed. I was thinking okay, Claudio, you need to go out and fix your audio somehow. I was thinking of having an RSS feed that I don't know how I would describe this, Dave. For people who would like to, that the episodes are not enclosures, they're just like on the web page, so that you can link, that would have a link to it instead of being an enclosure, so you can read it in a blog feed and then you can choose to press play on it. Do you think there's any value in that? Because some people were saying that they don't want to subscribe to a feed, but they do read it as a blog. Or no value? Anybody?
I'd have thought it would have been quite useful, actually, in an RSS reader, if you're into that sort of thing. It would be quite a fun thing. Because as it is at the moment, if you subscribe to the feed, the podcast feed with a feed reader, then it's formatted horribly. I think we've discussed this. It needs some really good formatting for RSS.
Okay, we might do that. But I think a lot of the podcatchers can also display embedded code as well. But anyway, that's one for, you know, long winter events, if you're right. Okay, so yes, we don't filter anyway. And I put in the line that I thought it was on the website, but it was probably more in the text of what we had said down to the years. And that is, Hacker Public Radio is dedicated to sharing knowledge. We do not accept donations, but if you listen to HPR, we do expect you to contribute one show a year. This is what we mean when we say you owe me a show. So a little bit of an explanation there. And then other things that were updated is basically all the, there's the contribute link. It used to be a long page, and now it's split it up into separate ones. So we've got a requested topics page with a link to how you can get there. And Dave and Mike Ray, I need to talk to you about multiple series and tags at some point. But the major change is on the calendar page. If you go to the calendar page, you get the scheduling guidelines now, which says that you decide when your show wants to be released. And there are some guidelines in there which are basically what I think a lot of people wanted. So you can pick any slot you want. So by default, the next available slot is always picked for you if you go to the request page. But here in the calendar page, you've got, you know, the upcoming shows with a graphic of, you know, the previous shows. And you've got the shows for the next 2 months shown, which has been reserved and which have been posted, for example, you know, podcast recommendations is episodes 16, 8, 7, so you can click on that and actually play it if you can't wait, and then all the reserve shows. And then shows that are outside of the 2 months are down as also scheduled, and then we have the emergency shows. But instead of So an episode now has a link that just says available reserve now. And if you click on that link, you will be brought to a page which will tell you some stuff. The first thing you need to know is that basically how to fill in, you put in your email address and the show that you require, and then we'll send you an email, and you have 15 minutes to click on that link that's in the email. For that 15 minutes, that slot is locked for you. After the 15 minutes, it no longer becomes available, and all sorts of things are checked in the background as you're doing that. So there's basically, once you click on the link, you will be able to fill in information about yourself, which we will use to populate the host field, and information about the episode, basically the show notes. Everything that we had in the show notes up until now is now filled out in a web form. And you have the option to upload via the web browser, and this is kind of the important thing. So everything else is the same, you know, series is click from a link, the licenses and all the rest of that stuff. But you have the option to upload via the web page. And if you do that in Chrome, you will see a percentage upload. If you do it in Firefox, you will need to download a plugin in order to see the upload. They used to have that feature in Firefox, but not anymore. So you either need to be patient, but you don't need to upload the show via the browser if you don't want. You can you can put in a URL, in which case we will pull down the URL. But be careful there; it would want to be working, and there's no guarantee that. We're not going to pull the URL straight away. That's going to be a human pulling that down, just as a by-the-by. So it would need to be available for at least a week. But if you just select other, then we give you the information for the call-in numbers, the FTP, my postal address, where you can email your, or you can post your show over physically in an envelope and send it to me. And then if you're doing that, then your file name should all begin with the HPR and then the episode number, which, you know, is all detailed there. It's, I'm probably making it sound a lot more complicated than it actually is. So, and that's all linked on the main website. And that was a lot of work. Thanks. Well,
thanks for everybody who worked on that, because that seems like it's going to make it a lot easier for people to contribute.
I hope so. There's already been one show posted through that mechanism, and three shows have been uploaded that way, and one of them has actually been posted, so quite happy about it. I am exceptionally paranoid with the upload, so you're going to see 402 errors if you do anything out of the ordinary. So this is not an invite to hack the thing, although if there are PHP programmers out there, I would appreciate you people auditing my code, because I'd like to make it available to everybody.
I just got suspicious activity detected.
Yep, that would be one of the examples. So, for example, we have never had five episodes from five different people on the same day. So probably now five people have clicked on that link and it's gone, oh, something suspicious has happened. So it's probably blocked it.
Well, that's entirely your fault, Ken, because you said about half an hour ago we do five episodes a day, so somebody must have panicked.
Yeah, exactly. I wish it were that easy, 50. I really do. So, yeah, anyway, I do stuff like that. I do I check lots and lots and lots and lots of things. But it's been something that's been on my list for a long, long time. So hopefully it's not completely automated. We're never going to automate this. We just dump it to a isolated directory. We don't parse any of this stuff on the server. So if you're thinking of, you know, putting a big exploit on up there, that's something that you can do, I guess. But we're going to be taking it down to a completely different machine and running tools on it, keeping Dave very, very busy for the next few months. But the beauty of that is if we need to make changes on the web form, the output of the forms and the show notes and the host stuff, we can do that without having to redistribute a updated template or whatever. So I would ask people to use the web form, and That's all I have to say about that.
Oh, and we just missed one. Let's see, 1930, greetings to Afghanistan, Kabul, Kandahar, Mazar-i-Sharif, and Herat.
Happy New Year! Okay, just to finish off the what was on the news, Mike Ray Mumble How To is broken. He's having lots of problems and still having no dice getting into Mumble there, so he can't get on. And I'm going to contact him because in my experimentation with streamlining the HPR broadcasting thing, we're now using a VPS. Well, we had the VPS, which was sufficient for what we were using, and it wasn't capable of keeping up. And I just asked Josh Culp, who's from anhonesthost.com, our sponsors and patrons. And within a few hours, the server had been upgraded to 4 gig processors, 4 gig of RAM, and 4 additional processors have been added on the fly, and everything is just sweet. There's like less than 10 seconds of a lag in playing, streaming out stuff. Everything's in one running in one session. Mumble goes into Pulse Audio. Pulse Audio goes into Dark Ice. Dark Ice goes out into Icecast, and Icecast just streams it out. And you can play like mPlayer in a screen session, connect in there via SSH, start up mPlayer, and it will go be picked up by Mumble and go out on the stream. So it's really, really a nice solution. I will probably do a HPR episode on that as well. And then we're looking for help putting up the show notes. I did get contacted by Bruce Patterson of the... Give me 1 second while I... from distrowatch.com. And he has an announcement that he's looking for somebody to take over the Distro Watch podcast. And I don't know if people... I'm sure, Dave, you listened to that.
No, sadly, not anymore.
The Distro Watch podcast is a... Laszlo Botner sends out a Distro Watch email list. And Bruce and his team have taken it upon themselves for the last, I don't know how many years, to basically read this out as a script for the podcast. And to be honest, they do such a fantastic job, you wouldn't think it was a script, but it is. It's very, very useful to hear what's happening in the distro communities, what's coming up, new distros and stuff like that. So if you're want to do podcasting but don't want to have to think of something to podcast about, then this is the thing for you. And it might be an ideal thing where a group of people can come together and say, well, we'll do if we all do one, you know, five people come together and you do one a month or one every month and a half, it would be ideal. So yeah.
Well, I know the king of not thinking, it's Pegball. He could do that.
I sure can.
I think Bruce might be put off by the didgeridoo at the beginning of every episode, though.
So I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's it. Dave, do we normally have anything else that we would want to... Did I miss anything, do you think?
I don't think so, unless you want to comment on the changes we made to the CSS, which is not really very exciting.
Yes, go ahead, actually, yeah.
It was not, as I say, very exciting, but I felt that we didn't have anything in CSS to represent tables very nicely, so we agreed on some CSS to make, for example, the table in this show 1676 look prettier. So that's all there is to say, really.
Yep, it does, actually, and it's not, and there's a few other things that I'd like to, you know, fix on the CSS in general. I think somebody emailed me with fixes, but never got back to me sending in the fixes. So I know something's wrong, but I don't I don't know what the fixes are to them, so please, please contact me if you notice issues with the website. It's not set in stone, so if there are improvements, please send them in. Also, I'm interested in the navigation. I have it kind of now that you give shows and you have to click and contribute an info theme and upload and stuff, so if people want to suggest a better way of doing that, but please do. I've also did validation on most of the web pages, so there, you know, there were a few missing tags and stuff. It's always nice to spot those things, so if you're used to that sort of thing, then give me a shout. And with that, we'll switch it back to your regularly scheduled podcasting.
And with that, folks, this is the point where I totally turn into a pumpkin for at least 4 hours, so I would implore somebody to pull up the shared pad, or my notes, either one, but I put both addresses in the chat often enough that I think people can find it, and continue taking notes in my absence. However, as long as my battery lists, I probably will be listing on the stream, and I'm totally going to leave the Pi running, so... Well, feel free anyway to say bad things about the total mess I've made of the podcast so far in both Podcast Planet and on the stream.
Can we also somebody get a copy of the Podcast Planet log as well tomorrow? I also need to go and do family stuff now, so if I don't get back to you, happy New Year, 50, and thanks very much for carrying it so far.
And as I reminded you last month, we still need to sing.
Join us now and
share the song with you'll be free. Hackers, you'll be free.
That was going out to Mike Gray.
That was one of those things where, you know, like, I kind of wish I were deaf so I didn't have to hear it.
See you later, guys.
At least you didn't have to see it. Later, Ken.
Time.
I had a very important comment to make just now, and I can't remember what the frig it was.
Must have not been all that important.
Oh, yeah. I'm logging IRC. Somebody remind me to dump my log.
All right, now that the community news is over, where are we on New Year's greetings? Am I audible?
Yes, you are. I'm fighting with Eliza.
The chatbot?
I tried to get it to tell me to dump my log the next time I said something in IRC, and it tells me you can tell yourself that, so I told it to piss off.
Don't pick a fight with an artificial intelligence that's clearly smarter than you.
No, it's not. I tricked it into fighting.
Never go mud wrestling with a pig. You get dirty and the pig enjoys it.
Sounds like my kind of weekend.
I was thinking that sounds kind of fun. Oh, Ken needs to come back to improve the quality of the show.
Yeah, now we're starting to talk about pig mud wrestling.
Which is fun. Have you ever been in a greased pig contest?
He was the greased pig.
Shit. Damn it. I was about to say something and you beat me to it.
Frickin', I'm making a phone call, too.
To your lawyer telling you to disavow all liability for the show?
Is there a hotkey I can use to tell Mumble to switch audio outputs in between headphones and speakers?
No, that sounds entirely too useful for the Linux world.
Yes, but that's why I run Linux, because it lets me do things like that.
Well, if you can set up a key binding that runs a script, you could probably do it if you could script it.
I wouldn't know how to script that. It's all clicks and crap.
You sure it's not just a front end to a command line? I mean, come on. Even Pulse Audio has a command line control utility.
Yes, but I still roll with ALSA.
Darn, it's quiet. I'm just going to read from the IRC from now on.
No, do not read the IRC.
No.
It's like YouTube. Don't read the comments.
Don't tell me about comments on YouTube.
It's like tilts. Don't listen. Don't go to any links Dan posts.
LemonTunaMouth.info. Everyone get there now.
You could
that domain is still up, but Jonathan can't afford Nelf. Like, what is this world coming to?
You can actually just do a YouTube channel just based on YouTube comments and just read the YouTube comments from around the world from various channels. That would be quite funny.
Does anyone have a pool and know how to work one?
Used to, sort of.
Okay, let's see. Where's my calculation? I was told to put 2 gallons of muriatic acid in my pool. My pool, I believe, is 46,000 gallons of water. And I was just working on the pool light, and my frickin' arms are acid burned. Now, I put the acid in, like, 4 hours ago.
You put what in your pool?
Don't you just put chlorine in the pool?
No, 2 gallons of muriatic acid. Apparently, the pH was high.
That shit's corrosive, man.
Oh, yeah, but in 2 gallons in 46,000 gallons, that's, you know, nothing.
Not necessarily. To etch a concrete floor, you need a ratio of one part muriatic acid to 45 parts water. And you still have to wash that off immediately.
Wow.
Well, you'll be spending the next couple hours in the emergency room.
Nah, I just rinse the water off in the sink, and then I reached into a big pickle jar, and I'm good.
Yeah, I was about to say, you should, like, douse yourself with some vinegar there, boss.
Now, the redness is going away. I think I'm good.
Haven't you tested your pH?
Yeah, you know, I did the idiot method of testing the pH. I got the bottle of from the hardware store. They said, fill it with water, bring it back, and I did. And they're like, oh, yeah, you need acid.
And then he dumped it in and went, it'll probably be okay.
Yeah, but don't you have your own pH tester?
They told you to put 2 gallons?
He said I probably need 3 to 4, and I should only... I'm like, well, let's go low and see what happens.
Is your pool pump on?
Yeah, I had it on for about 4 hours, 5 hours.
Did you... When you put it in, did you all dump it into the same spot, or did you distribute it as you went around?
All around. Because you know what? As you pour that stuff in, you can't take the vapors coming off it.
Oh, geez, I wonder why.
Is it because it's corrosive?
Well, see, Rich, this is what I'm remembering. The last time I used muriatic acid, I filled up a... I was wearing rubber gloves, and I filled up 2 capfuls. We'll say I had about 6 tablespoons of the shit, and I dropped one of the caps onto the garage floor that I was going to etch, and there's a really big hole there now.
Yeah, the shirt I was wearing, I threw in the washing machine and did a rinse and spin.
And now I have to buy a new washing machine?
No, now I have a short sleeve shirt.
I would have just tossed the shirt, used it for a grease rag.
I think, you know, if somebody needs to hide a body, we just take it to Rich's pool.
Could yeah, be. Seriously.
Oh my gosh, I'm reading the IRC. This stuff's bad. Boy, the calculation on the pool might be way the flock off. I just measured and figured out cylinders that would occupy the space as an average, and hopefully I'm not way the heck off.
Did you do the calculation yourself, or did the guys at the hardware store do that for you?
Well, the guy at the hardware store is like, well, what kind of pool do you have? I'm like, I don't know, 20,000 or 30,000 gallons. I'm like, yeah, I guess that's about right. And then I went out and measured this morning, and the number I came up with, you know, not a precise measurement, because it's like it's almost like a figure eight. It's, you know, like kidney bean. You have a dent in one side, but I got a dent in both sides. And the number I came up with was like 46,000 gallons, and I'm kind of...
All right, well, a 24-foot, 4-foot-deep pool in a circle is roughly 18,000 gallons.
Okay, on one end of my pool, it's 9 feet deep. So it goes from probably, you know, 4 feet to 9 feet.
Where's the manual for your pool, man?
Manual? What do you mean manual?
You just type man pool.
Bro, I shit like 6 times a day, man. I don't need any more fiber.
I was just telling you to dump your logs, okay?
I appreciate it, because I will forget.
Come on, can I not make like a downloading data joke? I did that at Thanksgiving and people got the joke. But no, speaking of bad jokes, I'll tell you the worst one I had today. Or not today, it was this year. Worst joke of 2014. So my wife and I are in the grocery store and we're looking for, don't start laughing now. We're looking for things for Christmas dinner, and we see blue velvet cake mix. And she's like, blue velvet? What the heck is blue velvet? And I said, it's like red velvet, but it's coming towards you.
Boo.
I'm sorry.
Rich, they said 2 to 3 gallons for a 20 to 30,000 gallon pool.
Yes.
Don't swim in it.
Because they said like the basic dose is a quarter of a gallon per one per 10,000 gallons of pool water. How high was your pH?
Hey, I don't know. I think I got the paperwork. Oh, wait, what's this?
Watch it say 2 cups.
2 gallons? We really meant 2 liters. We're sorry. This metric conversion stuff screws us.
Yeah, I got to look. I think the paperwork's in my truck.
Check your paperwork, man. Something sounds off. Bad.
Well, I'm wondering, you know, even though I did pour it all around the pool, I'm wondering if it just stayed on the surface.
No, it intermingles and it does mix with the water and everything, and it'll dilute itself out, but it's kind of slow. It's kind of like when you have a glass of ice water or just really cold water out of the tap, and then you pour your vodka into it, you can watch the vodka swirl around in it. It's slower than that.
Yeah, because after I realized what happened, I went around and I stuck my arms in another part of the pool, and it didn't seem so bad.
Genius. Absolutely pure genius. Get a pH stick, man, not your arms.
Well, my wife's coming home.
Wait, you're saying your pH stick is your arm?
You should use another stick.
Yes, women and naked.
Don't worry, if it falls off, well, you can sew it back on later.
You just use cold fusion.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Jay Lindsay on that one. And he said, that guy didn't even work there. He's just a clever assassin.
I don't know, you should definitely check the pH again before you let anybody swim in that thing.
Yeah, I will.
If you find, like, birds in, like, various states of, like, you know, you find bird skeletons at the bottom of your pool, that probably means there's too much.
You probably won't find any bird skeletons. There'll just be a couple feathers floating on the water.
No, those will dissolve too, I think. But just think, you could sell a service where like people jump into like your pool and they come out superheroes.
Yes.
Your pool pump's still on, right?
No, I'm heating my hot tub right now.
Nearly time for the time zones. UAE apparently, and I don't know what else.
Okay, so who's doing the readings while we're waiting?
You brought it up.
I didn't bring it up. Seb brought it up, but I'll do it.
I don't know what else. I don't know what is going in the UAE because somebody was saying on IRC. So yeah, Boom can do the readings. It's about 3 minutes to go there, I think.
My clock must be 3 minutes fast then, because I'm seeing that it's exactly 1,500 hours my time, which means it's 20,000 hours Zulu, which means it's greetings to, and then 2015 greetings to much of Russia and 8 more, Moscow, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and Muscat, which means UAE, because that's Dubai. So we're right on time.
You're early.
Yeah, you're early. With my phone as well, so that was early, but yeah, those are the next ones. Happy New Year to them.
Someone's not running NTP.
Probably not, no. Oh, wow. You know what muriatic acid is more commonly known by? Hydrochloric.
At least it's not sulfuric.
Johnny was a chemist. Johnny is no more. What Johnny thought was H2O was H2SO4.
That's awesome. In my former line of work, we came across a lot of H2S, which is lovely.
That's hydrogen sulfide. Yeah, you dump that in water and you've got H2SO4.
How do you dump a gas into water?
I'm sure there's a way to do it. You could always bubble it through, or it could mix with water vapor. I mean,
usually this stuff would come up through like the lakes and whatnot we'd be walking on.
It probably makes you immune to Pigwell's rotten egg farts.
Not when your well water smells like rotten eggs.
Actually, you don't really smell it if it's in higher concentrations than 50 parts per million. And now it's the new year.
4 seconds ago, I think, for those countries. Yeah, now I'm making it 2015 for them.
Yeah, here now. The announcement's already been done, though.
Yeah, we're not dropping 26 balls here or anything, okay?
No, I'm going to leave that alone.
I cut it right at that. I have that.
Beautiful. So what's this about a soda stream? Is that what we're turning Rich's pool into?
A soda stream? Don't know.
Well, I mean, it's really supposed to be like carbonic acid is what makes carbonated water. At least it would be very low concentrations of it. I'm not really much of a chemist. It's my weakest subject. If you talk to me about significant digits, I might just, I don't know, go catatonic for a bit.
I don't even know what a significant digit is anymore.
Or significant figures. It has something to do with... and some.
I've seen them at Palm Beach Gardens Mall.
Nice. It has something to do with the accuracy of your measurement. Like you may have something down to the the thousandths of a gram, but it may not matter because your scale isn't that accurate. How you're measuring the mass isn't accurate or enough so that you may be really really precise, but you're off, and so you only care about the first digit past the decimal point, for example. That's about all I really understand of it.
It's your special rounding things that you only use for this.
It's why I did not do very well in chemistry.
That's why I sucked at statistics.
Oh, don't get me started on statistics. If chemistry is my worst subject, statistics is my second worst.
Because statistics for me was, hey, do a bunch of math and forget everything you learned on how to do math and just guess and you'll get the right answer. But if you actually work the problems out and get a more accurate answer, you fail. He didn't tell us, my instructor for the class didn't tell us how many places to round our decimal places to, so everybody else in class did 2, and I did 4, and I think I failed 3 tests in there because of that alone. And fortunately for me, I did the show your work thing, and I'm like, look, I can prove that I have the right answer, and I'm more right than everyone else in the class, you should fail them, and I still managed to pass. But he still wouldn't take away all their marks and give them 0s. I didn't understand that.
Well, you know, if you don't pass enough students, the class gets reviewed for, quote, being too hard. I was going to say, there was something about Ken was talking about earlier. Oh, the announcement bot. Except for the fact that it's in eSpeak and it's the same voice as we all use. I was like, Ken, this is why we can't have nice things, because everyone's willing is going to talk over the bot.
If we had a thing that gave us a 30-second warning to shut the hell up before the bot thing, and then like 5 seconds after the bot was done doing its thing, that made like some sort of noise, that would be handy. You know, like one of those air horn noises. Talks over everyone.
You maybe got house music going in the background?
Trap, my friend, trap. My apologies. It is Creative Commons, though. Or if it's not Creative Commons, it's freely redistributable.
I think Goat and Your Mom is freely redistributable also.
So is that lemon tuna mouth thing.
What was it? Dido, Dodo, Debo, ta-da. What do you want to know?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Doba.
Wouldn't you like to know?
It's been a while. You'd think somebody else other than us would talk.
No, never.
If there was a good chat subject, maybe, yeah.
Well, why don't you come up with one then?
Gen 2, go. Why you don't need wireless adapters on your camera?
I totally needed a wireless adapter on my camera. What am I supposed to do when the cop takes it from me? The problem is the only solution I know of is a Wi-Fi SD card that you need Windows or Mac to activate.
Dude, I think you just... like gave me the only real use case for having a Wi-Fi adapter on your camera.
There you go. That's right. Backing up your footage in 3 separate countries. By the way, you and I need to talk about that in case I ever do need to back stuff up, because you're in Canada and outside the range of certain jurisdictions.
But the home of Echelon.
Not necessarily. I'm a U.S. citizen. I'm only in like a geographical different thing. Like I'm still... my government can still get me.
That's right. I'm going to need to find somebody who's not a citizen.
Like my wife.
Oh, well, that works. That, and I'll just probably have to see something if I can back it up with my lawyers. It's not like I'm going to go around recording cops, but, you know, hey.
I would. Well, I really can't. We should, change the subject because I can't stream this.
So how is it HARP was a U.S. military installation and it was in Canada?
I'm sure the same way they did it with the one in Cuba. You know, it's like, hey, right, we're going to have a military institution here. And it's a 100-year lease. Deal.
You kidding me? The Cuba, that's the only source of revenue in Cuba.
Selling tobacco. Or no, tobacco is privately held still. Or it's companies. Yeah, the Coffee's Collective.
Actually, I know tons of people from around here who get on Cuba for vacation. And they love it there because it's a cheap spot to go vacationing. And it's like a flashback to the 60s.
all the 1960s cars.
Yeah, they love it. And as long as they stay on the little resort area, they're completely oblivious to any of the social decay that's happening around them.
Speaking of social decay, did anybody see the interview?
No.
We watched it on YouTube for $5 or $5.99. Good, you know, good lowbrow humor, laugh, and my wife enjoys that, so we had a good time.
I want to see the one that Sony pulled from the theaters.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, I want to see that film as well, I think. But, yeah, after Obama said his thing or whatever, it's back in America in cinemas and online. Like, well, that was the news here in the UK anyway. But I'm wondering about the rest of the world when it will come into the cinema or on DVD.
I can't understand your accent.
Yeah, could you speak English, please?
No, could you just talk more so I can like use more words?
Me?
Yeah, you. Like, your accent is really hard for me to hear, and I don't know why.
Because it's different from your accent.
Yeah, but I listen to a lot of different accents, but where are you from?
No, I just told you if you listened to what I said a minute ago.
Did you miss the part where I can't hardly understand you?
I said the UK.
Yeah, but what part? I know a bunch of folks from the UK, and you don't sound like any of them that I know.
Somewhere south, but not too south.
Now we're back on the accents again.
I love accents, man. But it frustrates me when I can't hear the English through them.
How are you I'll not hold him, you able, beat him. How are you not able to understand him? I can understand him just fine.
I don't know.
I you know, it's funny because you're both Southerners of different countries. You should, like, you know, have some, like, this, like, Southern bonding thing going on, but nope.
I thought I was still a Southerner when I came to Canada, and then I discovered that 90% of Canadians live within 100 miles of the U.S. border.
Frick, I forget where it is in Minnesota, but, like, 90% of Canadians live at a lower latitude than that.
It's probably one of the more northernmost points. And again, considering how cold it is up there, I really don't blame them.
You know what was good about Minnesota? Is you could get cheap flights to Denver to go ski.
I thought leaving was the good thing about Minnesota.
Well, I kind of did say that.
When I was flying in from Calgary and whatnot, Minnesota, St. Paul, that airport's where we always went to and then branched off to go, like, to Atlanta or whatever. And miserable place. It's shaped like a U.
I don't remember the airport. Well, there's two terminals. I guess it depends on which terminal it goes to.
I'd be in the international one.
Maybe I wasn't there. Yeah, I flew in and out of there a lot.
Why do they have all the iPads everywhere to order things off the menu?
You're going to have to give us some more context here.
In Cuba? Or Denver? Or Minneapolis?
In the Minnesota St. Paul airport.
Oh, who knows? The airport puts crazy restrictions on things, and it might be that the preferred vendor for a checkout terminal is whoever that uses iPads. I know, not speaking totally authoritatively on this, but my local airport guy runs an airplane repair shop, you know, an airframe power plant mechanic, and the airport is supposed to get a percentage of his revenue.
Wow.
That sounds like a sweetheart deal, if you're the airport.
Yeah.
I guess they do have to pay for you those things, you know, like security.
Well, and here's the thing. It's it was on private property with an easement onto the airport, and so really none of that has has very little to do with anything. You know, just if there was or wasn't an A&P repair business there, it wasn't going to cost more or less on security. That should be paid for through your rent.
But still, I don't understand why the iPads were so prevalent and so locked down.
Oh, is it for customer ordering? The customers actually use them to order?
Yes.
Oh. Now, they hand them to you while you're in line, or what do they do? Or you just walk up?
You walk up to wherever, and the little iPads are mounted on the table or mounted on the counters, mounted at the bar, and you flip through the friggin' iPad to order your stuff.
No, I haven't seen that.
That sounds like it's really inaccessible.
It's very convenient if there's only one person at the bar and there's 20 people waiting for drinks. If you're the only guy at the bar, it's very hard to talk to the bartender / waiter and, you know, have a conversation.
Why, because they're always looking at their iPad?
No, because they're always running around to everybody else. They're not being a bartender, they're being a friggin' waiter. I have a problem with a bartender not being a bartender.
You need him to be a counselor also?
Yes. That's why there's a tip jar.
And I'm not cutting on you. It's like you go to places. I told this story, I don't know, in the pre or post show on Tilts, but probably once in 7 years, the last 7 years, this summer, I went to a strip club. And as soon as I got in, I wanted to leave. But the most amazing thing, since it's been a long time since I was at one of these places, is the girls would come around you, and then if you give them a dollar, they would leave. It's like, no, I thought it really, I didn't want you around me in the first place. But I thought it would be you pay them to keep them occupied here. No, as soon as they got money from you, they left. So then finally it's like, all right, just give her a dollar so she leaves, you know?
Yeah, you should have given her a 20. She might have stayed longer.
No, I'm sure she would have left. You know, it's like...
No, you're just not worth the economic investment. That's what it was. I mean, come on, really? Give somebody a dollar for their time?
Well, no, they'll hang around.
Because they want to see how much, you know, what their income level is. And it's like, oh, this person's going to hand me singles. Well, I know this guy over here is going to hand me 20. Gee, you know, free market says I know exactly where I'm going. I just hope he smells good.
So it's Audacity that has that thing that removes the silence?
Yeah, Pokey tried to use it once on my music compositions and then wondered why it was off time. This isn't exactly meant to be all that mean to Pokey, but I was like, dude, yeah, those silences are supposed to be there. In his defense, I looked at the waveform in the sound editor, and there are, because the way I was generating that sequence of music, there are some serious silences. But yeah, it's in Audacity.
Does Audacity have a command line tool yet?
I don't know. I'm sure a version exists for iPad. You can edit your podcast and get a drink at the same time.
I said command line, not finger line.
And I was attempting to be funny. Yeah, Rich is like, I'm not cutting on you. I think you're the only one, just so we're clear. Everyone else is ripping on each other as hard as they can.
He's too busy tending his burns.
Yeah, I think his fingers fell off and he can't hit the push-to-talk key.
No, my arms aren't red anymore.
Well, that's a good step in the right direction.
No, it's because they've dyed white because all the flesh has fallen off.
Have you lost your tan yet?
He's bleached his skin.
Are you even still in Florida?
Yes, I am.
You lucky bastard. It was... hang on, I gotta convert to... Do you read Celsius?
Only when flying.
All right, it was minus 20 out here this morning.
Which is just about minus 20 Fahrenheit.
No, it is not. All right, 10 degrees Fahrenheit is minus 10 degrees Celsius, roughly. Minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit is minus 25 degrees Celsius, roughly. That one's really rough. I don't remember that one. And then at minus 40, they're both the same. It doesn't matter. It's still cold.
Minus 20? Where the heck are you? I mean, it was minus 20 when I was in Minnesota.
I'm north of Maine.
Crap. Yeah, I think it was 80 here yesterday. It's only 70-something now.
Winter must suck for you.
Yeah, I'm going back to New York Monday. Or actually, Saturday.
Oh, it's cold snap up here right now, so have fun.
Yeah, I didn't know if I was going to drive or fly or what, and I got my sports car in New York and the truck down here, and I'd like it reversed.
No, I think you got the better end of the deal right there.
Well, I want the four-wheel drive truck in New York, and it isn't.
No, you want the four-wheel drive truck in Florida so you can run over all the assholes on the road that don't know how to drive.
Oh, gosh. I don't know if you look at my Google Plus feed, but there was somebody that barely made it into their diagonal parking spot. They basically 90% of their car was in the roadway.
I know that a lot of states have issued the law that makes it mandatory for new drivers to have X number of hours of driver's ed before they even get their learner's license or anything like that, or before they get their license, they get their learner's and they get driver's ed, and then they have to have X number of hours logged driving with an adult. But I swear, these kids are getting worse and worse at driving.
That's because they're probably busy texting.
Oh, dude, that's so old school. Don't you know about sexting?
Please. It's like I'm at the gun range with my daughter and her friend and, you know, taking them shooting. And the second my daughter puts down the gun, she's texting someone.
As long as she put it in a safe direction first.
Yeah, actually, she's been good about that.
You should carry around a portable cell phone jammer with you just so you can have an aura death and destruction to everyone.
That's funny. Well, when I was commuting on the Long Island Railroad, I always wanted that. Especially, you know what the worst was? The worst was when you're working in Manhattan, you're going back out to Long Island, is the holiday weekends, you know, 4th of July when everybody goes to the Hamptons. So if somebody pays $3,000, they get a 1/125th share of a bedroom, which means they can only sleep in the bed for 6 minutes with three other people every other weekend. And they're yelling into their phone, "Dude, I'm on the train. I'm going out to the Hamptons." It's like, yes, you think you're cool. We understand that. So, you know, meanwhile, I'm riding the train every morning, every night, the whole shooting match, and I don't get to sit because some jerk has his suitcase on the seat next to him instead of putting it in the luggage rack.
Oh, you are a considered American. I would have kicked that asshole in the head and thrown his bag in his lap.
It's crazy, the people that you get in and out. Believe it or not, I turned on the TV twice in, you know, the last 2 weeks, and both times the same episode of the Kardashians and the Hamptons was on, but they were in Matatuck, which isn't the Hamptons.
Which means they lied to you.
They lied. There's a North and South Fork on Long Island on the East End, and the North Fork is where the town of Matatuck is. The South Fork is where the Hamptons are.
And only someone from there would know the difference.
Or care. Although I had been to Long Island once, but I went there to see some friends. And actually, I've been to Long Island twice. And the first time I was like in high school, and you know, it was mostly just hacker meetup type stuff. And then the second one, you know, we actually went there. And there are farmers markets on Long Island. People still farm on Long Island. That seems strange to me.
Well, when you think about it, East Meadow, which is in Nassau County, was a meadow where you had your herds graze. So a lot of that, a lot of the very populated areas used to be potato farms. Long Island was really well known for potatoes.
Unfortunately, now the lifestyles of the rich and the famous have come in and taken it over.
Well, it is honest. Every time I go flying over Long Island, I look down in places that were farmland, or, you know, that there's not a whole lot of woods, is now housing developments, which is, this is what they call gangplank syndrome. Although my house is 120 years old, but it's like, I finally moved out east. Nobody else should be able to move out east. You want to pull up the gangplank and not let anyone else come.
That's exactly how I feel. I want to buy 100 acres of land somewhere. I don't care where it is, as long as it's 100 acres. And I would prefer that it be a square. And I want my house to be in the dead center of that square, so that no matter which direction I go outside to piss off my deck, nobody can see me.
Yeah, too bad you won't get any cell towers on that property.
Yeah, you probably can rent them out. But actually, I'm in Jupiter Farms, which is an unincorporated village. There's no, actually, I'm not even on a paved road here. And There's no police, no streetlights, no stoplights, just road signs, and that's about it.
I miss small towns.
And the funny thing is, you know, 10 minutes east and you're in a densely populated or reasonably densely populated area.
We sold our house. I'm now in a densely populated area in a basement apartment, and it sucks. I hate my life.
Ah, sorry to hear that.
That house that you spent so long, like, doing an energy audit on?
Yeah, that one. Broke even.
Okay, well, I guess it could have been worse.
Well, it made us very mobile, and there's no way we could afford to stay there, given our future income situation. Wife's pregnant. I'm in school on unemployment.
Wow. I hear Pegwall's got some free rooms available.
Yes, but unfortunately he's on the other side of the border, a long way away.
I don't want none of you in my house.
I would gladly stay with Pegwell, though, but I don't know if he'd cuddle us really well.
You know. Okay.
I think he's on the phone.
Yeah, he's probably very, very perturbed.
So it's not me getting only one side of the conversation?
No, he's not saying anything.
Wait, I thought I heard a vehicle. Nah, maybe I was mistaken.
I'm confused.
It should be a natural state, and you should be used to it.
Oh, I just got confirmation that Klaatu is going to be on the show.
Where is he?
In New Zealand.
Did he urban camp all the way to New Zealand?
I believe he did, even while he was floating on the raft.
Oh, yeah, I figured he was, like, urban camping on a steamship that went there.
I believe he used his chest hair to lash together a couple logs and strap them to some sea turtles and
Klaatu
made his way.
Chest hair? That's news to me.
Well, I didn't...
Shit happens when you drink coffee, man.
I didn't know you were that close to him.
Well, you know.
Maybe he can send you a lock of his chest hair.
With a little ribbon around it with a little GNU World Order written on it.
Oh, and you know it's blue.
Love Klaatu.
I miss him bad. I've actually started using Twitter because he was started using social networks.
Well, that's a good question. What social networking tools do you guys use?
Twitter.
And what about Google+?
Kinda, but there's no lightweight application that I can put on my phone, and it's very hard to tie something like, say, Bitlebee to Google+.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't use Google+ because it annoys me that I have to, like, it tries to tie everything I do online ever to my Google+ account.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's really annoying as well. So, like, if I ever do anything in Google+ on a browser, I never do Google+ shit on my phone. I always do it on a browser, and I treat it like Facebook. It is a disease that should be carefully managed.
Well, that's something I didn't realize. And I knew this, but I left Facebook open because there was something I wanted to look at and remember to go back to, and I had it open for days. I'm like, oh man, they're logging days worth of where I've surfed.
If you use Android, there's an app in the F-Droid repo called Tinfoil for Facebook. You still log into Facebook. I mean, Facebook still tracks you, but it runs Facebook in its own browser context, meaning that you don't have to be logged into Facebook on your normal mobile browser, and when you click a link, it opens them in the normal mobile browser, unless you change the preferences. But this basically allows you to use Facebook, and then Facebook doesn't get to actually know very much about what you do on it. And no website gets to know about Facebook's usage.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free software.
It sounds good. All right, I'm getting worried. My wife was shopping, and she hasn't returned yet.
She's getting more pool chemicals for you.
I also use the chat part of Facebook because it seems like many, many people, that's all they know how to use is the little Facebook Messenger thing. So, but that ties into Bitlebee, so I'm fine with that.
Yeah, Facebook is a non-federated XMPP network, and you can't do certain things like change your Facebook password on it. You have to set up your account the right way, but, you know, once you get that going, you can do OTR over Facebook, which is really fun when you go back and, like, look at your message history on the website, and you see all these encrypted messages to each other. It's great. But, you know, it works with Linux. It's Facebook chat. You can talk to grandma, and everything's fine.
How would I get OTR working with, say, my mother?
You would have to get her on a chat client. You can't do it on the website. So good luck with that.
So if anyone's using the website, it's pretty much fail.
It's unencrypted. Yeah, people, I've seen some people, especially using like the Google website, if you have OTR on, you'll see a lot of blank lines in the content because it's trying to initiate the private conversations. And it's just, you know, most clients ignore it, but sometimes you'll see a blank line. But OTR is cool stuff, so.
What social networks do you use, Rich?
Yeah, the wife came home. I got to unload the truck, her car.
All right. Have fun. Enjoy seeing how much money you don't have anymore.
What money?
Rockin'.
Ahoy, me hearties.
John?
What's up, Brian? How's it going?
I'm good, man. I'm good. How's Los Angeles treating you?
I'm actually not there yet. I'm still up at my dad's for another week or so. He's been having me do farm stuff.
Well, it's good to get it all out of your system before you travel.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely decided I'm more of a city boy than a country boy, after all.
Hey, buddy.
Ahoy, ahoy, me hearty.
You're like a Scottish pirate. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, I'm from down east, so we talk funny.
Yeah, you use funny words, too.
Like bombic?
No, I was just thinking down east. What does that mean exactly?
So down east is, if you're in North Carolina, specifically Carteret County, if you go east of the North River Bridge, you're down east.
Is there an up east?
No, there is not.
That's why I find it confusing.
Well, you kind of have to go south and around your ass to get to your elbow to get there. But, you know, it's way out in the middle of the water.
So whereabouts are you from?
Parker's Island, North Carolina.
Georgia.
Obviously, he's down and around your ass, up your elbow. What?
Nice.
Although, my dad retired and moved up to the mountains and bought a farm up here, and he's been raising all kinds of crop stuff, and every time I come up here, he has me doing something. Honestly, I don't care too much for it. You know, riding around on a tractor is fun, but the rest of it's hard work, and it's not the kind of hard work I like doing.
I miss driving around on a tractor.
Does she think your tractor's sexy?
No, she never seen it. And it wasn't even mine.
Well, Dad's got a new tractor. I got an old one. I got a 53 Farmall.
I believe this was a 59 International.
Nice, nice, nice.
49 International.
What color?
Candy apple red and white. Custom paint job.
Well, they're all some sort of red. Unless you get a Ford. Fords are all blue, it seems like.
No, this was repainted. My dad wired up a painter's paint booth, and he painted it for him.
Well, there you go. Hot rod tractor.
Oh, it was pretty. Had it painted Georgia colors. Georgia traveling colors, red and white. That was my present. I got to pick the colors.
Well, better than Carolina blue.
Wear that ugly Duke color.
In this household, everyone wears red and white.
It's not the Tar Heels. Who's that? Gamecocks?
NC State.
I only believe in the SEC.
Ah.
Come on, you gotta play wussy teams like Tech. Preface with Georgia.
At what, basketball or football?
Both.
Well, I reckon I need to think about getting back to work. Dad's got me putting up a fan in the hot house because it turns out it gets too hot in there during the summer. And so I used to be an electrician, so every time there's an electrical project, guess who winds up doing it?
And she just cross some wires together and burn the place down, then you won't have to work on it no more. But burn down something small. Something small.
Well, yeah, burn down the bar, and then it won't burn down the house, but it'll be enough that he won't have me doing electrical work for him anymore.
I was thinking something a little bit smaller than that, you know, like the outhouse or the well house.
Yeah. We're a little more sophisticated than having an outhouse. The well house ain't nothing but a piece of pipe sticking out of the ground with a motor on top and one of these fake rocks sitting on top of that.
Is your motor, how deep's your well? How far down does the motor run down into the open cavern there?
I'm not sure. I've never looked at it. When he had the well put in, they wired it up for him, so.
Ours was on a slab. It was a 500 and something foot well. It was a pretty deep one. And that was next door neighbors. Ours was 3 something. And we had to build like a little slab, then put a little shed up around it and everything, and insulated the shed because it'd still freeze in the winter.
Yeah, put heat strips on it.
Oh, come on. It's a whole lot cheaper just to build a building and put insulation on it. I wonder what this segment will be called. Rednecks Digress?
Yeah. And 5150 gets to talking on here. We can have some interesting conversations, too.
I think he's sleeping right now. He'll be back later.
Well, I went and got me a 3-pack of Monsters to get me through the night.
Oh, son. You know, they have this awesome thing. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it comes in a little bean, and they call it coffee.
I can't drink coffee. Shit's nasty.
Go somewhere cold. You'll learn quick.
Nah, I'll pass. I'm moving out to SoCal here in a couple of weeks.
I drink coffee on and off, and I only liked it black. And I'd have maybe one cup every 2-3 weeks a month. And then when I moved to Maine, I drank coffee by the pot because it was cheap and hot, and it wasn't hot water.
Well, I reckon that's one way to do it. I just do hot chocolate.
Oh, hot chocolate ain't cheap.
Yeah, that's true. Of course, you could buy the big 50-pound bag of cocoa and make your own.
I was couch surfing. I don't think I could afford that at that point in time.
Yeah, never quite done the couch surfing thing. I might do that at some point.
Little word of advice, don't.
Yeah, just saw a commercial on the TV. There's a dating site just for farmers.
FarmersOnly.com.
Exactly.
Must have prissy city girls all over it.
Yeah, I gotta admit, though, I do like me a girl with a country accent.
I just like a girl with an accent. I don't really care what accent it is, as long as there's one there and as long as I can hear it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
As long as it ain't no bloody Yankee accent.
Yeah, we don't need no Yankees around here.
Does a Canadian count as a Yankee?
Eh, we let them slide by, sort of. But until it comes to the winter and they... Well, what it was back home, all the Canadians would come down during the winter because to go to the beach.
I know. I'm in Canada now. It's bloody cold.
Yeah. I reckon we'll let you slide by because Canadians kept the economy going back home during the winter.
Yeah, my in-laws are planning to be snowbirds. They're planning on migrating down to the south every winter. They're looking at Myrtle Beach and that general area.
Well, if that's their thing, then Myrtle Beach has got it for them. But if they don't like... If they're not the types to go visit Vegas, then they probably shouldn't go to Myrtle Beach.
We actually go... That's our family vacation. We get a couple condos and whatnot there. And my folks from back in Georgia get a couple places, and their folks, my in-laws up here, get a couple places, and it's just like a whole herd of us just move down and migrate in and party for 4 weeks on and off. Some of us are there for 1 week, some are there for 4 weeks. You know, those lucky retired folks.
Well, I reckon that's my dad. I never saw too much benefit from driving from the beach I lived at to another beach that has a whole lot more people.
Ah, well, you're on a beach. What's the point of going to another one?
That's my point.
Unless it's got bigger waves.
Well, just wait for a hurricane. Get plenty of big waves in.
Guys, I'm going to have to mostly step away from a bit here. We got a minor emergency at work.
All right, well, peace, bro. Well, I actually got to get back to work myself, so I'll be back on here in a little while.
All righty.
Don't you leave me with them.
I will leave you with them, and you will like it.
Don't worry, buddy. I'm still here. Y'all have fun. Bro, start a fire in the kitchen. It'll take care of your work problem.
No, it will just give me three problems because I'll have to start a fire using regular expressions.
Oh, fun. I think I'll rather put up fencing than deal with regular expressions right now. Anyway, I'm off. I'll be back on in a little while.
3:30. If you can hear me, I'm going to come down and shove this thing that I'm drinking right up your derriere.
He might like that.
I'm just reading what he put in IRC, and it says, man, Cobra 2 is working on that southern accent. But he really sounds like Bob and Doug McKenzie these days.
All right, well, I'll see you later.
Have a good one, man. Don't party too hardy. Pegwall.
Yep.
What are you doing?
Eating lunch.
Hey, handsome pirate, how are you?
You scared him into silence.
Is that how it works?
Must be downtime.
Uh-oh, are we 9 minutes closer to New Year's somewhere?
Yes. So I hope you have the little thing you pulled up, because I don't, then I'm too lazy to go find it.
I'd have to know what UTC is. And being a pilot, that's kind of embarrassing. Oh, I know where to look.
How do you not know what UTC is?
Well, what it is now. I don't know if we're -4 or -5 right now.
Max don't run on UTC. Oh, I can't wait for summer. Spring. I can't wait for spring. Hell, dead middle of winter. I can't wait for the dead middle of winter when the days are a little bit longer and it's not dark at 4:30. Hey, 3:30, you should get on the little mumble thingy.
Okay, so we're coming up on 2100 Zulu. So it's New Year's, or in 8 minutes. Should I announce now? I'll wait. I'll let everybody be in suspense.
Yeah, let us be in suspense. We got no good conversation going on right now. Is anybody taking notes?
Notes of what? The conversations? And put them in the Etherpad?
Yes.
I have.
I'm very busy. I'm too busy to do that. I'm playing a game right now.
And I know Pegwell's too busy doing nothing.
I'm eating lunch.
You made yourself hamburgers? More than one?
No, I'm eating dirty rice.
Hey, I thought you only ate ramen noodles.
Why are you eating the rice a second time?
Recycling.
Don't you find it a little chunky and clumpy?
Nah, it's when it's really good to spread on a sandwich.
Just like that Australian food you love so much.
Yeah, Vegemite is fantastic.
Oh, I didn't say the name for a reason. It makes me gag. Is that Ken Fallon?
It is.
Hi.
Aren't you tired?
Yep.
Ken, are you going to make the announcement in 5 minutes?
Yeah, I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to, restart the stream. But let me just check that.
I did that too, and I flushed after.
Wah, 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 wah. I hope you guys are all filling in the show notes as you go.
Oh, yeah, they're all full.
Oh, yeah, we got that covered. That's a nice big line of bullshit for you, Ken.
Somebody was filling it out, but he suddenly stopped.
I think Bro might have been doing it, but he just had to go run and take care of a fire. I think it's awesome that we talked about a pool.
26 divided by 8 is what?
Yes.
Well, 3 times 8 is 24.
If you haven't figured it out, it's 3 1/4.
Yeah, I don't like quarters. Okay, the question is, should this be a 4-hour segment or a 3-hour segment?
I say use the very scientific eeny, meeny, miny, moe method. Or the faster scientific method, flip a coin.
Yeah, that helps.
I'm sorry, Ken, I'm just very lazy today.
As can be seen by your show notes. So what have we been talking about? So community news, nothing. So it is now what time?
We didn't really have a topic. We were talking about, there was another southern fella that hopped on. We were rednecking it out there for a little bit, and that was about the only thing of note.
Okay, so we are hitting very soon another time zone. Yeah, I'll carry it for another hour, I think, stop it then. We'll see how we go.
Sounds like a lovely plan.
Okay, let's welcome the next time zone, which is 2100 hours UTC. And we welcome Iraq and 20 more, Baghdad, Khartoum, Nairobi, and Addis Ababa, and 20 more. Happy New Year, everyone. And if you're in any of these regions, please feel free to join HPR as a host and submit your shows via the brand new spanking HPR website, which I now need to unlock. Give me one moment while I do that.
And while you're submitting your show, please correct Ken's pronunciation.
Yes, thank you. I think that goes for everybody. Everybody will be treated equally here in HPR. You will all have your names butchered equally badly by my good self. I'm just wondering, have any of you guys come across the talk of the right to be forgotten case here in Europe?
No.
Is there new information on that? I'm familiar with it, but I don't know anything new about it.
Well, it's not actually anything new per se. It's just the reporting of that in the press doesn't give 100%. Well, the funny thing about the right to be forgotten is I think the US and UK and Ireland law and Australian law is kind of based on British law, yeah? So it all comes from the same pot.
Why do the work if you can plagiarize?
Yeah, I'm making all this stuff up now, so feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But one of the things that I noticed when I moved to the Netherlands was there are slight, subtle differences. You know, like you go into McDonald's? No, not that one. It's the little things. Subtle things in their approach to the law was one thing. And in the whole right to be forgotten case was taken by somebody in Spain who had gotten bankrupt over something or other and then had taken his case to the European court and said that although that there is a right to have this information forgotten, and the fact that it was coming up on Google for him meant that Google weren't removing these files related to this person. And in the reporting of that, especially in English-speaking podcasts and stuff, and English-speaking articles, I found that people are slightly missing the nuances in that. And just thought maybe as a topic, it might be something interesting to have a little chat about, namely that about the right to be forgotten and certain other rights. For example, in the Netherlands, if you commit a crime, they won't release your name, so you will be just known as I would be known as Ken F or K Fallon, whichever happens to be the least. They will use the name, the last name if that's the most common, or the first name if that happens to be the most common. So the idea being that even though a criminal, it gives the, even though somebody is convicted of a crime, they still feel that the criminal has rights that they shouldn't get named.
Well,
they can come out and start a new life after they've rehabilitated themselves. So that's interesting for me.
Am I distorting, or is it just me locally?
It's you locally.
It's probably because I was talking, so it probably looped through.
Oh, okay. All right. So here in the United States, there's a couple of things that ought to be discussed, and one of them is an arrest record, which is not a crime. It's not a conviction. Some papers publish that. So the joke was in high school that all of the teachers would look through the paper to see who was bad over the weekend.
Yeah, and that was something like when I was living in the UK, there was a lot of things about paedophiles going around, and there were, you know, the mob rule were rooting out, finding paedophiles in the neighborhood.
When you say that, I think about PETA, yeah. Which is people eating tasty animals.
No. It's just about people with a criminal record for abusing children, essentially.
So now here in the United States, they categorize it as a sex crime, and you could be, and I don't know for certain, I heard this and I haven't done any research on it, but urination in public could be considered a sex crime, and you would have to report your location basically like a pedophile would.
That's only in certain states.
Oh my gosh. God bless you if you have to pull over to the side of the road in that state. Now, I did work for a company. We did pre-employment background screening, and one of the things is a criminal background check. Now, it falls under both state and federal Fair Credit Reporting Acts. And the interesting thing about that is if the job that you're interviewing for is expected to pay you $40,000 or greater, they can go back 7 years in your history. If it's supposed to be less, they can only go back 4 years in your history. So now that's for a third party looking up the information. Now, if I was going to hire one of you directly, I could conduct my own search personally and go back to the day you were born.
And this is where the right to be forgotten thing comes in. Well, for a start, personally, you could not, as an employer, ever look up somebody's record. That's something that you're not allowed to do, aside from what's available publicly. So even if you are a pedophile and you've murdered and massacred people, after you come out of jail, for a start, your name wouldn't be on any records except with the police department. So if I was employing you, I would have to get you to fill out a form. You would have to go into the police department with that form, and you would hand it to the police, and they would give the police permission to tell me the outcome of that search, which would be a binary yes or no. Obviously, when you're going in with that form, you would know the results because, hey, you've done the crime. So you would go in with that form, and then as a employer, I would get an answer back from the police. Yes, this person has been cleared, or no, this person is not suitable for this position. No other information is given out. So that's how, like, when you're a teacher or something, they make sure that the checks are still done while the privacy of the person is still respected and the information is not shared. And that kind of goes core to what they're trying to protect with the right to be forgotten case. So as you can see, there's a massive mind shift difference between the US, the UK and Ireland, Australia and whatever, and continental Europe.
Yeah, we actually, some of our clients, because they were concerned about legal issues, they wanted us to make the decision. And basically there were, I think, four states. So there was clear, there was terminate immediately, there was do not promote, and I don't know if there was another one, but we would, based on a matrix that we agreed upon with the client, would return to them those decisions. They wouldn't see any information, but they basically would say, hey, not an issue, you know, eligible for hire, or if it's a recurrent check, like a driver may go through recurrent checks for their driver's license and other things. and they may get a, you know, terminate immediately or a do not promote based on something happening in their history.
Okay. And the other thing that was mentioned quite a lot in the arguments against this, right, that it was, you know, something that the EU was pushing on people, but these little, I did some research here in the Netherlands, so I can't speak to what it is in Spain or Germany or some other countries. And this was an addition that was added to the Dutch constitution in 1986. So it was put in there to protect people's information in databases as they were coming online then. So it is something that, you know, any person coming in doing business in the EU should have known about. So it wasn't like, you know, there was an argument, oh, this is something that's been pushed down Google's throat at this point, but, you know, it was on the books and this is something that they should have known about. So I don't think things are as clear there as, you know, what you're hearing in the news reports. The other issue that has come up has been when Google was asked to remove those searches, they removed them from google.eu and google.co.uk and all the, you know, all the local domains within in that are operating within Europe. However, they didn't. If you went to google.com, you would still get the search, even if you're originating from Europe.
Oh boy.
Yeah, and you know, Google were arguing, and they and the tech press were saying, well, these are American domains, and that's fine. If that was the case for if you went to google.com and wanted to watch a video, for instance, that's available in, if I wanted to watch the latest Saturday Night Live, for instance, or whatever on that's available in the US, then I would get an immediate, this is blocked here in your country. So technically, everybody in Europe is well aware that Google can block based on IP address and not domain name. So that I thought was also a incy-wincy little bit of fun. So those are a few things. Other than that, I don't really want to go into, I can't really add a lot to the case, except those were two notable things that I did notice.
Well, that's kind of interesting, but the other thing that goes on is, you know, in a pre-hire process or maybe a post-offer process where they do background checks is, you know, they want to check credentials. So if you say you have a doctorate in computer science and you came from Brazil, how do you validate that? And some of these things can be a little tricky.
Yeah, that's actually a useful one because they've, Just on the right to be forgotten case, there was this mayor in one of the local towns has now been sued by a guy who was a pedophile who has been put into temporary housing above a nursery, and the town, the mayor, released that information, and you know there was protests and he was driven out of his home and all the rest, and he's now suing the town because they gave his information out, at which point I was thinking, you know, one half of me was going, well, you know, good for you. But then it comes out that his preference was for older, you know, children. Not that it was any good, but he had, you know,
I'm just totally creeped out.
Yeah, it's just weird what you need to balance on what is balanced. So it's never really as black and white as things are made out to be. And needless to say, as a father of three children, I have very, very, very strong opinions on what should be done to pedophiles, just by the way.
Yeah, that, boy, see, I don't know if I can talk about the situation as a business policy, and if you did enough research, I don't want to name specific names, but we're caught in a tricky situation once, and we found a way to get enough information to the client legally that they could figure it out on their own.
Yeah, and that's the thing here that you just wouldn't be able to do, and that's what the whole right to be forgotten thing is about. Although the funny thing is, you can go into the library and you can look up that person's, you know, you can look up September 1986 and find out that Joe B was arrested for whatever. So you could do it that way, but, you know, it's not as accessible, I guess.
Correct.
So,
but then again, it would also be Joe B and not that person.
So, like, when you're going to, like, newspapers and whatnot, old newspapers in the library and looking things up, it's already redacted?
No, it's never published in the first place. So my name would, I wouldn't be, in Ireland it would be Ken Fallon was sentenced to this, you know, did this terrible thing or accused of this terrible thing or whatever. Whereas in the Netherlands it would be KF if my name was, because my name would be pretty unique. Anyway, it would be just initials or something.
I've kind of touched on this topic, and I was just talking to my wife about this the other night. When you talk about anonymizing data, and I've worked at two different hospitals, and we would anonymize data, and we went through some pretty tortured methods to really abide by and go beyond what any regulations would be. And the reason you want to work with pseudo live data or anonymized live data is because there's going to be corner cases that you run into when you're writing software. So it is important to have that information so you see these instances and are able to code for those issues. Now, let's see, both my cars have GPSs in them, and one is a General Motors car from 2007, so it has the OnStar system, and it has a cellular phone and data system. You know, it'll do cellular data. And same thing, the Genesis has a GPS and does cellular data. So both of those cars, they can be reporting back their position, but apparently that information's anonymized. And it's a little like, I know both cars, if you have the service, they can turn them off, they can unlock them, they can do a bunch of things remotely, along with locating them. And, you know, who's to say there's not a kill switch for these vehicles? Or, you know, hey, wondering where Rich is if they don't know.
Yeah, exactly, and especially law enforcement.
What about you? Oh, dang it, sorry.
I'm ready to get the 1970s carbureted Oldsmobile with breaker point ignition. Where the most sophisticated electronics in there are the radio.
Yeah, it's scary actually looking inside an engine now, you know, opening up a car. And I remember taking apart having an old Ford Escort Mark III and then just completely replacing whole sections of it in an evening and going down to the scrapyard, buying bits and fixing the thing up and then heading off again.
Was that a 2.3 liter engine?
I have no idea.
Or are you in Europe and you're not allowed to have engines above 2 liters?
This would have been probably. I have no idea. I was never that big into cars, to be honest.
Cars only got you from point A to point B, eh?
That is pretty much it. Mostly away from point A, which happened to be Bailiwick.
That A was for you, 330.
Looking at the show notes here for the next episode. Guns, guns, and more guns. I guess it's easy to identify when you come on, Rich.
What's your opinion on the right to be forgotten, Ken? Do you agree with it, or are you opposed to it?
Well, I do agree with it, yeah. But then, I do agree with it because a friend of mine, she had a, you know, she was young and she went out with this guy, and he ended up. There's a thing where if you live together here, after 6 months, you come into this default sort of marriage-like arrangement.
Common law?
Kind of, yeah. Well, you can get a contract and whatever, and you specifically have to get a contract saying that I'm not sharing my goods and services or whatever. But anyway, they ended up in a situation where she was liable for all the debts that he had. And so for 5 years, she was on the credit watch list and whatever. So then after the 5 years, even though she had done none of this stuff was hers, aside from the fact of, you know, falling for a
calling for a guy, I mean, which we all do, but you
maybe
try
you.
Everything once. You know, after 5 years, that was all gone. Then there was no problem getting mortgages. There was no problem with credit cards and all the rest. So, and then you have the situation where, okay, you're going in and you have somebody's done something, and it does work on the assumption that people can rehabilitate, which I think is a nicer way to work from.
Well, I think the issue, there's a couple of issues, is recidivism, rehabilitation, and the context. And, you know, if you have a crime where there's a very high rate of recidivism, and if it's somebody in, like, say, a pedophile applying for a daycare center, that's a frickin' jam on the brakes issue.
Yeah, but what's he a pedophile for? You just say a pedophile. Is he a pedophile because he slept with a 16-year-old? Or is he a pedophile
right.
because he was in possession of some awful pictures of 10-year-olds?
Right, okay.
Yeah. And that's what the right to be forgotten thing, I think it works out quite well. But it does require you to put down your basic instinct of picking up a club and going over and battering somebody to death, you know?
Well, first off, you shouldn't treat anybody in a way that you wouldn't want to be treated. So if you got the feelings of going and beating somebody upside the head, if you don't want that to happen to you, don't do it. But regardless of that, when you come across folks who have committed crimes and they've already served their time, I'm not so sure it should be forgotten. Like, that's their chip on their shoulder. They have that to put behind them and to grow from and learn. Either that or they fall right back into it. But they're released to the public. It shouldn't harm them that they've been, quote-unquote, rehabilitated. If they weren't rehabilitated, they should still be locked up. If folks are not being hired because they have a criminal record, then they're being discriminated against. And I see no difference in between that as somebody not being hired because they're a woman or because they're black or because they're Mexican or whatever. There's no difference to me whether you discriminate over somebody because of something that they did or if you discriminate because of the color of their skin. It's all the same thing.
Yeah. The thing, though, just to be clear about the right to be forgotten, is only the right to be forgotten by the public at large in general. It does not mean that you have the right to be forgotten by the penal services or the law enforcement or the government or whoever. There are certain cases, like the example that we gave, that if you're going into healthcare or you're going into any these sensitive areas, you will get investigated and your entire record going back to the beginning of time will be analyzed. So there are safeguards there to protect society in general. So it's not a black and white issue, but I'd be very much in agreement with what you're saying there.
Yeah, I don't fully understand the issue, but that was just my two cents on what I was hearing.
Yeah, the point in this case is that Google are arguing that this guy went bankrupt and after 5 years that should be scrubbed from his general record. Bankrupt, 5 years, then he can start a new life and do his thing. What happened was later on, after the 5 years, he was being Googled and that information was still coming up. So he said, well, I have the right to be forgotten, so this should be taken off the books. Google should remove that. The court said, yes, you do have a right to be forgotten. It should be taken off the books. And that was the right to be forgotten case.
Yeah, all right. So he should be forgotten in that country, not the world.
No, he should be forgotten in the region that signed up to that law, which is Europe. So this is a pan-European thing. So a lot of these countries have that laws. And all the country states have signed up to this doctrine. So it is EU law now. So the EU law is that if you are physically in Europe, that should not be found. That information should not be available to you. Except, of course, if you go down to the library in that country and you make a specific, you know, you get a private investigator and you go the extra mile to find out about this guy. Yeah, then it's going to come up because it's a matter of public record. Yeah, not a problem. But this guy's point was he does have a right to be forgotten, so it shouldn't be the very first hit that comes up on the guy's website.
Google could probably use their GeoIP blocking that they use for their multimedia, not protection, but DRM of sorts.
And that is exactly what I was saying. That's why I was calling bullshit on their argument that no, we don't want to censor the web. Well, you're already censoring the web, you know. If this is a law in Europe, you have a choice of obey the law in Europe. In Europe. And I completely agree that if you're Googling this guy and you're sitting in Texas and that information is on file servers in Texas, well, then it should be displayed in Texas. Yeah?
But let me ask you, I just want to do the opposite here and play devil's advocate. If Google said go F yourself, what are they going to do? Block Google?
Yeah, they did it with Microsoft. 500 million fine a day for how many days? 500,000 fine. There was millions that they were bleeding out of Microsoft over the browser case. They have done it, and they are thick about it. And this is a law just like everything else. And Google has a choice, like they did in China. If they don't want to obey the laws of the land that they're operating in, then they should move out.
Mm-hmm. But it's not like we are China, or you know, Europe is China, where you have the Great Firewall.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. If you're operating in the country, you know, whatever you say about the regime or whatever you say about it, you're going to operate there under the rules of that country, I'm guessing, yeah? Otherwise, you're not operating within the country. Now, if Google didn't happen to have an operation within Spain or within the EU, and this information was stored in servers in data farms in Texas, well, then, you know, the EU doesn't have a leg to stand on. Go F yourself, yeah? Because the information's not in Europe, but maybe about European citizens. You could argue, I suppose, but that would be a dangerous road to go down on. But what we're talking about here is information aggregated by servers that are located in Europe about people who are located in Europe, and they clearly violate laws that they know about because they've been on the statute books, in these countries at least.
Right.
4 years, longer than Google has existed, longer than they. I looked it up, and it went into law on the same day that, on the same, later on that year, the first TCP/IP protocol was proposed. So this is how far back these things are going.
Okay, I've got a slightly different take on this, because there's another issue that you're not even thinking about on this, and that is, what is the source of the information? Here's a question for you. Let's say a case had become internationally known, was written about by American newspapers, American publications and stuff, and European publications. Now, that information could be aggregated both in Europe and in the US. How do you determine what information you can show to somebody who's from Europe if they are trying to search through US servers? There's no geolocation information associated with the individual, very fine-grained pieces of information. That's, you know, basically saying to Google, you actually have to go back now and supply geolocation information on every single article that has a mention of any person in any country, any place, seems to be kind of a fallacy.
No, you're taking this to the extreme. In Germany, for instance, there's a law that they're not allowed to display Nazi symbols. They uphold that law, and if you're in Germany, you can't find that information. Yeah, so this is an accepted thing. About the reporting of that particular case in general, the reporting about that case is completely open and should not be censored in any way, because it's a reporting of factual events that are ongoing at the moment. And the guy who has brought the case has done so in public. So the reporting about him will be forever associated with the fact that he was bankrupt 20 years ago, yeah? Absolutely not a problem. But within the laws of the country that you're in, you need to abide by whatever those laws are. And I don't for a moment agree with the argument that it's too difficult to do, because it's not. These are
these are issues that they have tackled, that is are being tackled by technology companies. They can identify people's faces worldwide across the globe. They can you can show them put on a picture, and they can identify your face from the millions of people that are out there. They can produce a self-driving car. This is not an unsolvable problem. It's a problem that you don't want to you tackle. I agree with that. But it's a problem that they made for themselves because they ignored the law for so long.
Okay, I have a very fundamental disagreement with you because unfortunately, a lot of these technologies, like facial matching and facial recognition, aren't working correctly. There are lots of cases where they are misidentifying people. And the fact that companies are using them because they think it's going to gain them some kind of financial gains is not really driving the technology. It's the financial gains that's driving that.
Okay.
So point, I wouldn't even
I try think to you're say missing that the point that. There, but
my point was that they are capable of tackling complex problems if they put their mind to it. So the argument that it's a very difficult problem. Yes, I'm not saying it is or it isn't. The fact is they have teams of highly qualified, highly trained engineers who are used to dealing with complex problems and finding solutions to them. So in one case, the argument is you can build a self-driving car, but you can't do this. You can build face recognition, but you can't do this. Both equally complex in their own fields, yeah?
If they worked correctly, yes. And if they were definite solutions to a problem, yes. Neither of those are actually solutions to a problem at this point, in my opinion. That's part of the issue, is we see all this hype around technology. It's unfortunately broken technology. So just because something's out there, because marketers wanted to push it out there, don't think that it's actually technologically sound.
Yeah, but it's
I still good. Think you're missing the point there, boss.
So going ahead, over.
I said I still think he's missing the point there.
How am I missing the point?
You're arguing something different. You're both arguing, but you're not arguing about the same thing. Ken's arguing about a privacy issue, and you're arguing about the technology.
No, the argument is that, unfortunately, the technology, as far as the government wants it to be applied, does not conform to what their requirements are. And unless the government wants to put forth a system that says, okay, now all newspapers and all these businesses have to go back and basically provide the information to Google so that we have all the geolocation information associated with every scrap of information that's out there.
No,
so
that can all be classified
and filtered and handled correctly, then you can't absolutely guarantee that this can be done.
That's not what what's been asked. Right. For a start, a newspaper reporter reporting about this incident, Google is allowed to index that. Yeah, a newspaper is also allowed to index it. But this information is coming from sources that they know where it's coming from in the first place.
But take this for an example. The Internet Archive has huge... actually, it's not on the Internet Archive. Maybe it is. I can't remember where it is now. But Aaron Swartz had actually gone through and pulled a bunch of court records and had actually made them available publicly because they were supposed to be available publicly. Okay. Yeah, none of that, none of, and all of that's basically stored right now on servers in San Francisco. Now, say somebody had done the same thing in Europe, had pulled those court records and had stored them on servers in the U.S. Now, there's no geolocation information for a lot of those records. It just was never encoded with that.
No, so, but they took them from there in the first place. The documents were sourced from there in the first place. The documents themselves will have Regio de Lequa, blah, 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 España on them.
They may not.
Yeah,
one of the problems is that you see stuff that's out there in these systems that's heavily redacted, heavily modified, and heavily changed to a point where you can't always necessarily identify them, or there are images that aren't necessarily going to scan correctly if you try to do OCR on them. You're basically putting a lot of burden on people to actually make certain that they attach extra information to things. That's just not happening now. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not happening now, but that's my point. The point is, it should be happening. If that's the information that they need in order to do this, it's information that they should have been adding the whole time as they were doing their indexing, because it's the law.
But you can't lay the blame on Google for that. Google's one company. You're talking about Google against every government in the world at this point.
Every company, every local search engine in Spain has had to deal with this. Every newspaper, every outlet, every search engine in the Netherlands has had to build their systems knowing the laws of the country that they're operating in. Not knowing the law of the country is not an excuse to get out to get away from. I can't remember the phrase.
It's not your get out of jail free card.
Exactly. Thank you.
I'm not saying it should be, but I'm saying that you shouldn't be laying the blame on one company, because you're not basically dealing with the facts of making certain that the source information is properly available. That you have the proper information associated with those files.
The source information is coming from government authorities. If you choose to throw that metadata away, then you are knowingly, you're not doing the job. Then you, that if they're archiving this information, it's sensitive personal information. They were going to be archiving it. The law says that after 5 years they have to retract it, and they have not done so. I don't see what's 100% clear here. They knew that the information is about people because of the databases where they're getting it from. What's rocket science in this?
There are so many different scenarios where that information can be handled in so many different ways. You just can't guarantee it. I mean, that's one of the problems right now. I'm saying right now, like, you know, here we had, like, Aaron Swartz, who went ahead and pulled a whole bunch of documents from the court system and put them out there. Now, those are publicly available documents. They're open enough. I could pull those down, archive them someplace on a server. Anybody in the world can do the same thing and archive them. Then you've got no guarantees of what controls are available over them. And Google comes along and indexes it. How are they necessarily going to identify that these documents that I have named A, B, C, D, and E are actually those court documents? They may not know that.
Yeah, but so there's
a lot of cases here that you can get through, and you can say that, hey, we don't necessarily know everything.
I completely agree with your point, but we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the Aaron Swartz case, which actually doesn't apply anyway because it's American laws. That information should have been public. That's what he was trying to get out, to make them public. And don't get me wrong, I am a huge advocate of having this information in the public, open rights and all the rest of it. However, we're not talking about that. We're talking about this information, its only source is from government documents. So on servers that are located in Spain, operated by a company that is registered in Spain, and yet they're arguing that the laws don't apply to them.
And other companies that perform a similar function in Spain are complying with the law.
Correct.
I'd love to see an audit of the systems and find out how accurate it is. That's one of the things I'm pointing out, is that you're kind of walking into a point here where you're just saying, oh, okay, we can make the technology do anything. Yeah, you can to a point. A lot of times I see stuff like this come up, and I know from having been in places where they fully have tried to comply with laws and actually go ahead and update this information and try to add this stuff, a lot of the times it's not accurate at all. And I think that there's a lot of things where, again, if you're going to say that a company has to be able to comply with something, they need to make certain that the facilities are correctly implemented to make that work. And I think a lot of times we see governments take these actions without doing that at all.
Yeah, but this was in place before the internet.
Correct.
Exactly. So you think that when they converted documents from offline to online, they went ahead and had all the facilities to actually do things like geolocation? Geolocation didn't probably even exist when they converted the documents.
They did, because they were physically there in the building.
Do you think that was encoded in the documents when there was nothing in the document formats of the time to actually support geolocation?
Where do you think the servers are that those documents are stored on? So the government scans them in. Where are the servers?
You know, good question. Especially now, look at the cloud. You have almost no guarantee of where your servers are.
No, we're talking about 1986. Where are the servers?
At that point, they might have been there. Now you don't know that. You know, that's what I'm saying. That you know, the point is, you can say anything. When it started, it was a good idea. The problem with our governments are they do not sit there and update things to actually handle the newer situations. And so,
holy shit, you're overcomplicating this subject.
No, I'm not. Not at all.
And also, you're not taking into account that there is another law that is extremely that's extremely in everybody's face that all companies need to sign up to, and that's the privacy law. What you're allowed to do with European citizens' information is very, very restricted. You're only allowed to use it for the information that you require, and you have to state beforehand what information that is. So they know about this. It's standard operating procedure.
I love that phrase, standard operating procedure. That's like going to the doc and the doc tells you, you're going to feel some slight discomfort. ADD
Don't
moment.
Get me started.
I apologize.
The doctor's over here. Come back in a week. But I do get your point.
I didn't mean to stomp on you, Sandy.
You guys did a fine job of stomping on me. I don't care.
Do you need a hug?
No, not at all. I'm laughing. I have fun debating this stuff. Hey, and look, somebody had to take up the devil's advocate position for real. That's the only thing I was doing, is I thought, hey, here's a chance for me to actually jump in and have some fun, basically trolling you guys for a while. Especially, by the way, me defending Google? What the hell is that?
It's just been very frustrating listening to podcasts over the last few months that have been discussing this, and not one of them has brought up the fact, okay, well, these are the laws of the country and you have to respect those, and you know, there is another approach, and that's the right to privacy, and there's another approach that the right to be forgotten isn't something new. And it's scary the amount of statements that are made, and I'm thinking, if this is the level of reporting and all the other things that I'm assuming are taken for, you know, factual researched topics, then it's a bit scary all around. But now that I've said it on the community news, I can get it off my chest for a year. Okay, that killed the conversation. Sorry about that.
Oh, no. Claudio Miranda killed the conversation. Just need to make sure that everyone knows that.
No, I think I killed it when I finally admitted I was trolling you guys.
Cool. Love it.
No, I stopped talking when I had to sling the headphones across the room.
What is up with Claudio's setup?
He's using Plumble, and he doesn't know. I'm guessing he doesn't know how to set it up.
Plumble.
I don't know how to set it up.
There's nothing
Plumble.
I know. Although in my Galaxy S3, it sounded awful, and I don't know if it sounds better on other phones.
Did you use headphones with your Galaxy S3?
Yes.
Claudio, get a pair of friggin' headphones, dude.
No, it still sounded awful on the Galaxy S3 with headphones.
Did it have bad reverb? Because he's echoing everybody back in.
No, it didn't do that.
Oh, I can deal with Gorkon audio quality. You know, Android.
No.
That's so funny. He keeps saying that whatever reverb back into the system is somebody else, but when it's only him that has the mic keyed up.
And, you know, if it was anyone else, but this guy is a ham radio guy. He should know better.
Right.
I love him to bits, you know that. Although I still think he should be doing more ham radio shows on HPR, but I'll let him off.
Has Gorkon done HPR ham radio?
No, he was going to do a ham radio podcast there.
Because there's Linux in the Ham Shack.
That is a good show. I like that.
Yeah, I haven't listened, but and I do have an interest in ham, but I guess not enough because I got interested in 100 other things too.
Believe me, that can happen. Guys, I'm going to have to go for a minute and do some family stuff. So,
15 minutes, what's going to happen?
I don't know.
15 minutes, we will have been an hour late for someone and somebody
okay,
else.
Okay, I'll stay then.
Hey, if that works, we can tell him in 60 minutes.
Why is it failing to compile, Dave?
Can multiple people edit this thing at the same time?
Yes,
isn't it brilliant?
So what happens when you reload the page?
You get the whatever's the version at that time.
What happens if you edit something and someone else edits something in a different place?
both edits are in.
Does it save them both as a revision?
Yep.
Can you look at, can you then reload the page and look at each revision individually?
Yeah, and look at the timeline thing up at the top. A little, we're talking about the Etherpad, I'm guessing.
Yes, we are.
So if you look at the timeline slide bar up at the top, it allows you to go back to different versions. It also allows you to save particular versions.
Right now, I only see versions edited by me and Russ.
Yep.
This is genius.
Isn't it? Isn't it just brilliant?
And it's open source, right?
Yep.
It is.
I think the project got was a Google project and got discontinued.
Well, they actually have their own website now.
Google, you mean?
No, Etherpad.
Well, I need to run and go make coffee and get dinner started because my tummy is growling.
Okay, you do that. I'm hanging in for another 12 minutes.
I hopefully will be back in time to hit the stop and record button again on my recording on the hour.
Super.
I'm ready for a nap. I don't know about you. You've probably been up for 20-something hours.
I had this weird thing, right? Well, I had to work today, unfortunately. So I was around to start stuff off with basically 5150 card. I had this weird thing last night where I just was late to bed anyway because I was working. And then I just woke up at 4 o'clock like that. Just could not get back to sleep. Wide awake, so I decided to go down and have breakfast, and I caught the 5 o'clock train into work.
Oh, man.
Then I was wrecked the whole day. So I had 2 hours sleep when I came home, which is why I'm okay now.
Yeah, I could go for a nap, but my wife, she wants me to put a light fixture up, a motion-detecting light over the garage.
Cool.
I'm hoping I got all the stuff I need for it. Really, the big problem is just figuring where I'm going to tap power from.
Your neighbors.
We don't have single-payer electric in the United States yet.
What's single-payer electric?
I'm making a goof on single-payer health insurance.
What's single-payer health insurance?
Basically, the government pays for it.
Funny thing is, here everybody has the same. Everybody has to have health insurance by law. And if you can't afford it, they'll pay for it free. So, but that means then you have the choice of whatever hospitals you want to go into. So it works quite well. Provided your plan supports that. But then again, the standard plan includes all kids, I think, up to 21 now. And, it only goes into weird stuff if you want to, the number of times you can do IVF, or if you get knocked down on a, when you skiing abroad, whether they'll provide you with a helicopter or whether you have to pay for that yourself, that sort of stuff. But most stuff includes like dental and pretty much everything.
Yeah, I used to ski without a helmet, then I got hit by a tree.
One of the funniest videos, and I presume it came out okay because the guy uploaded it to video or to YouTube, I saw this year was, they were skiing down the mountain, following somebody else's tracks.
Uh-huh.
And the guy was skiing between the trees and whatever, and then he goes off in between two trees into the darkness, and all you hear is like, oof, oh!
Oh, no.
And it was a place where paragliders had skied off, into the over a cliff. I really hope the guy was okay.
Yeah, I was in...
Guys, Mick.
Hey.
Excellent. You can do the show notes now.
My wife's just gone off to work, so I've got the rest of the day to myself, which is good. 11 o'clock in the morning.
You're back from the night, too. You were on earlier, actually.
Yeah, I was on last night. I jumped on this morning just for a little bit, but I couldn't speak, so one of those things where you've got someone else in the room.
So what's it like in 2015?
I don't know, it's actually a nice day. Oh, it's not really, I suppose it's a nice day. It's quite warm outside, but it's a little overcast, but it's not too bad. It's relaxing. I haven't really been outside yet. Should go for a walk.
No, you have to be on the New Year show.
Yeah, I know. But the whole day to myself now, it's quite good. actually really wanted to go to the Gears of Day sales, but I'm going to miss out because I wanted to get a laptop, but I think I have to wait till the next sales in a couple of months. So I just won't get a chance to get to town today. I've got cash in a couple of months. I think I'd rather pay cash and put it on a credit card.
Yeah, good plan. I'm editing some shows and we'll be leaving in about 7 minutes. Thankfully, we posted the show for tomorrow. It's up now. That's the pressure off. And if we get this one up, then the pressure will be off for Friday.
Is it New Year's yet in the States? They have, normally have you. When have they had it yet?
No, not yet. It's still making its way. It's just past India now. So we haven't hit here either in the Netherlands. Well, people are setting off fireworks still. There's a lot of people around because apparently there's no snow, so people who normally go skiing are forced to stay at home. Mm-hmm. So there will be a lot of fireworks tonight.
It's the middle of summer here, so there's no skiing. We do have a mountain next door, though. They were leaving fireworks last night, which is annoying. We have our national holiday on the 5th of November, so do fireworks. Lots of people have fireworks, they hoard it. They can beat it off
and easy. Oh, my machine's slowing down. I got a little Acer laptop. It's a netbook type thing. It's actually a Troublemate. Is it a Troublemate? It's called.
I was looking at Acer's, but I don't know. I think I'd rather get HP. I like Toshiba's and I like the HP's, but I want to get Intel. I'm not really interested in AMD's.
Oh, the saga of buying this thing. This is the only laptop that is available. Well, there's one laptop by Dell. They have a top of the range model that's $4,000 or $5,000 that's available with Linux. And
New South is the only $1,000 New Zealand to spend. Now, that's a lot for me. I know we don't have that much money. You can get some like last year's models for around the 800-900 mark. They're normally the 4G RAM with a low processor. I've got a washing machine going in the background if you can hear that. But I think I prefer to, I want an 8G laptop and I want something with a high-end processor. I'm sick of having a low. I'd rather spend a whole $1,000 than actually spend $700 and get cheap, you know, get one that's not going to do me for a year.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
One year for 1100, which is quite nice, which has got 8G RAM and it's HP. Toshiba's got some nice ones too, but non-touch, but touch stuff has come in and that's like it's like $2,000 here, like touch. So well, they're getting rid of all their old models. I'm just worried if I leave it too long, like if I leave it another 12 months, I'm going to miss out on all the, you know, all the non-touch laptops. There won't be any non-touch laptops around. So I'm just trying to get the deals when they actually come in.
Why are you avoiding the
Dutch? It's just too expensive here. Like, you're looking at $700 for an i3, if you're talking Intel, i3, a laptop. Like, it's just like, I can't see the point. I'd rather have a non-touch, get an i7 and get 8G RAM. It's pretty, you know.
Yeah.
No, I don't use touch anyway. Why would I want it?
I've spent all my life going, don't touch the screen, don't touch the screen. And if somebody touches it, get my spray out and clean it. A lot of people are touching the screen all the time, it just annoys me.
Would you guys recommend getting something with a NVIDIA card in it if I'm getting an Intel? Is it a huge difference or not? Like, Intel graphics aren't too bad, is it?
I am the last person to ask. My search criteria was it must come without an operating system or with Linux or BSD or some free operating system.
Yes.
And that narrowed it down to two laptops, so that was that.
What do you want to do with your laptop?
Pretty much this video editing and that sort of stuff. And the odd game I'm seeing. Pretty much. Not too much. Like not the big stuff.
Okay, before you answer that, we will... in 2 minutes, we'll be doing the new time zone. So, brace.
Did Ken Fallon just cut me off?
No, but I will. Go ahead.
Right.
No.
Go on.
I was gonna say, if you're not doing any serious gaming, or maybe 3D graphics, rendering, Blender type stuff, you could probably. I mean, an Intel card is just fine. I mean, I have an Intel card in mind, and I do some gaming, But if you want like cutting edge Steam, you know, Borderlands 2 gaming, you probably want an NVIDIA card.
You say Borderlands 2 is a must. I have to have that.
And if you want to keep your Linux experience pain-free of having to fight with some distros installing NVIDIA, you should probably, avoid NVIDIA.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. See, I've got an NVIDIA G210, and it's annoying on my desktop with some Debians and some Arch-based distros.
What pain have you experienced with NVIDIA recently?
Dan, I haven't had any, but I know some people have problems installing Linux distros and will just shred them for the smallest thing.
It's the low end, it's the 600 and the 210s that people have trouble with. Puppy Linux, Linux Help Guy, whatever he's called, has been having huge issues, and he tends to follow me on what operating systems I use, and we have the same problems all the time.
The only problem I had was I had to use the proprietary drivers instead of the free ones.
Yes, well, I used the priority ones.
Did you have a newer card, Pegwell?
No, but we talked about this on Tilts, remember?
And we interrupt this broadcast to bring you the news that it's 2200 hours. Please hold, please hold, please hold.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.